Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. You know, it is 2026. It's what the calendar tells me. However, we have to take one final look back at 2025 and the year that wasn't pro wrestling with a stop in December. Of course, the series wraps up today and help me commemorate the end. I've got not one, but actually three special guests on this very show to help me look at the end. We start with Mike McGuire of Celebrate Wrestling. He helps me look at the month of December in WWE. A little extended conversation he and I had about John Cena's final match, everything that kind of happened leading into it, leading out of it, and all the other news of the month in WWE. And then we talk to another first-time guest here, Case Lowe of Voice of Wrestling. You also may know him from his great interviews with Tony Khan on the Q101 YouTube channel. Of course, that's an alternative rock station in Chicago. Case and I talked for extended time about AEW, Ring of Honor, and also Japan as well. The month over there, gave a great dissertation on what I missed in terms of what's happening in Dragon Gate. A lot of opinions on World's End, William Regal's comments about neck injuries, and the like. So great conversation with Case and with Mike. And then the other special guest, it's myself. I'm going to help wrap up the series with a look at the month in TNA, NXT, AAA, NXTNA, I guess you could say, the junk drawer, and a lot more. So let's get right to it. The grand finale in the Pro Wrestling Year Review Series has arrived. We'll look at December with Mike McGuire, Case Lowe, and me, Josh Nason. Enjoy. The interview series has officially come to an end. However, I'm going into this with two guests. That's right, two guests, a double guest show. Helped me do this as someone that I've talked to plenty of times on his show. So I decided to have him come to my show, which is, of course, the man himself, Mike McGuire. Of course, McGuire in wrestling, been on that show before quite a bit. Dave Meltzer has as well, obviously. And then also he is a morning show host, get him out of bed. Back to work today, back at it. As most of the world is after a strange couple weeks with holidays coming right in the middle of the week, Christmas and then New Year's.
Happy to have
Mike McGuire here for the first time. Mike, thank you for coming with me this morning, this Monday morning.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, no, 2 weeks, and I rarely have done the full Christmas holiday break before, and I did that this year, and so it's basically been almost 2 weeks. And when you spend most of your life getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to start your show at 6 a.m. and you don't do that for 2 weeks, your body forgets how to do it. So yeah, he says like, get me out of bed. It's the middle of the afternoon when we're doing this, folks. And I cannot wait to find a pillow.
Yes, I'm going to bring it today. I gotta get up. I got to help our guy, Mike, but it'll be good. But yeah, of course, that morning show being 981 The Ranch, and that is out of Calgary, correct?
Just south of Calgary, called Lethbridge, yeah. So
there you go.
Just outside.
There you go. So let's get to it. So, of course, we talk about the month in of wrestling. Of course, Mike and I are going to talk about WWE and some NXT stuff and also maybe some junk drawer here as well. And, of course, other guests is going to be handling AEW and Japan and the like. So a special co-main event episode. So, of course, December in WWE, the big news was John Cena retired. I don't know if anyone heard. He's done officially. Saturday night's main event, Cena's last match. Of course, all the accoutrements going into it. Gunther winning the last time is now tournament to earn the spot, as our Dave Meltzer reported back in October. Of course, based on the press going into this, John Cena doubling down, saying he's 100% done after December 13th. No Vince at the show. There was some speculation that he might show up. Nick Khan going into this, did some interviews, a lot of media from everyone going into this, all positive, no disputes during John Cena's retirement run. Of course, the show itself, other than Cena, featured WWE versus NXT matches, Kota versus Obafemi, Sol Ruka versus Bayley, and AJ and Dragon Lee take on Leon Slater and Javon Evans. There was this, where is the match going to be on the show? Some talk. And a lot of people at the end of it didn't know where it originally came from. It may have just been a passing comment by Cena right at the beginning, as far as would the Cena match go first, would it go last, all this. However, of course, it did go last, And then we had celebrity tributes on the show. We had Tom Brady, Eli Manning, Snoop Dogg, wrestlers like Ric Flair, Undertaker, Rock, Flair, Linda McMahon, Matt Hardy, Triple H, lots more. Of course, main roster and not, all types of video tributes, Undertaker and Triple H doing this whole separate deal as well. And then, of course, he lost. He lost his final match. The smiling meme, we've all seen it a billion times. And afterwards, Triple H, quote-unquote, answering his critics, saying, "I will do what I believe is right for this business." He expected more boos as he went out there. The post-event thing, Joe Hendry made a surprise appearance on this show as his main roster, kind of commemorate his main roster call-up, I guess you could say. Afterwards, our Dave Meltzer reported that the company was blindsided by the fan reaction to the Cena versus Gunther finish. Triple H, of course, saying the show broke multiple records. And afterwards, as everyone does, the content creation people go crazy. Jeff Jarrett saying it was the dumbest finish in wrestling history. You know, every podcaster in the world, you know, had their opinion on this show. John Cena detailed the final toast he gave. He mentioned a lot of metrics, which it just made me feel gross when he said that, even a website that like ours that does business stuff. Company reportedly working on a John Cena documentary, no big surprise. He finally addressed The Rock, or he did this a couple times, The Rock and Travis Scott disappearance, and basically just kind of blew it off like, well, you know, those things happen, and we had to kind of move on. And also a federal lawsuit was filed against Cena, WWE, and TKO, not for the match finish, Mike, but regarding John Cena's theme music. So having said all of that.
That was a lot. Wow.
That was a lot, yes. And so what were your thoughts? I'm sure you've talked about this on your show, but you know, as we sit here a few weeks removed from it, almost a month, 3 weeks or so, you're taking the whole John Cena retirement situation at Saturday Night's Main Event and everything that happened before and after.
Thank goodness I've got your notes here, because I do have one line I have to get out right now, and that is Jeff Jarrett calling John Cena versus Gunther the dumbest finish in wrestling history. Jeff, with all due respect, if anybody knows dumb finishes, it's Jeff Jarrett.
He's seen a few.
Might have been around a few, might have booked a few, just saying. You know, for me, the whole thing was what it was supposed to be. And, I mean, if you want to go from the top here, with Gunther even going into the tournament, I mean, if you didn't think he was going to be the guy, I don't know who else it could have been. You know, we've already set the precedent early with Gunther that this guy is going to be a career ender. He's going to be a ruiner of things that we love, things that we like. And so for him to be that guy now with Cena and have him go out, and who else do we have around the corner? We've got Brock Lesnar around the corner, which was the match everybody was talking about a couple years ago, right, before everything went down with the Janelle Grant lawsuit and things like that. So Gunther, they're lining up to be a killer. I mean, I don't know what else you do with this guy. So right off the hop, for people that were mad it was Gunther, yeah, sure, you know?
Like John Cena's dad especially, he was not liking that for whatever reason.
I remember that, yeah. He was listing off all these guys, some that didn't work there, some that don't even wrestle anymore. It was pretty crazy, but
yeah.
The celebrity tributes, that was interesting too. I mean, the one notable name that wasn't there, and you've talked about it already, and you've said that Cena talked about it a bit, and Dave and I have talked about it on my show numerous times. Where's Dwayne? I had that question, that exact question for him this past week. Are we going to see him as part of the Netflix anniversary? Are we going to see him anywhere in the next little while here? Yeah. You know, there's all these AI bots now generating the Saudi offer, and people are saying the Saudi offer's out there. Who cares what the offer is? If this guy is still as prominent in the company as he was when he first signed the new deal, don't you think he would have popped his head in for a second?
Yeah. That's going into that. That was one of my questions, is whether he was going to be there. I mean, he should have been, even just as someone that's on the board and someone that's such a key figure. And I've had the big rivalry with Cena, put aside whatever happened this year. That's it's odd to me. I know he has a lot of commitments, but still, I don't know. Just you figure, I think he has enough money. He can fly in and out on the same day, probably within the same hour, if he just wanted to stop in for a little bit and then just take off, you know. It hasn't made any sense. I don't know if he's going to be recording this on Monday afternoon. course, before Raw on Netflix tonight, the 1 year anniversary. I don't expect him there tonight. If he's not going to be there for Cena's last match, he's not going to be there tonight, I don't think.
That's just it. Like, I don't know what they're paying this guy to do.
That's be the Rock, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
Sweetest gig in the world. If you look at it one way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, there's got to be more to that, right? There's got to be something not jiving between The Rock and Triple H, or The Rock and TKO in general. Like, there's got to be something there, because they barely mention each other in a sniff of each other. You know, the big Golden Globe nomination.
Yep.
Barely anything, you know, like one quick mention on Raw. Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't know if that relationship is as comfy cozy as what everybody thinks it is. And I wonder if there was an out clause on either side. You know, what if, because usually these deals, no matter how good and how lucrative they are, the companies will still put themselves in a position where they can get out of it.
Yeah.
So I'd be
shocked if either side was to do that, just how much it took to get there. If they're just going to quietly let it lapse. I don't know if it's a 5-year deal for the board. Usually they have some sort of, like, if you're going to join a board, it's like, you know, a certain amount of years or something like that. Maybe they just let it lapse after that and everyone makes their money. It's a very strange situation.
Unless that person is deemed a detriment to the company.
Sure.
That's where it gets interesting, right? Like,
yeah.
So I don't know. So anyway, back to the whole Cena retirement. the meme that came out of the smile, Cena's explanation of the smile. I think it's nerdy wrestling fans like us that get way too worked up over this stuff. Did I like it all that much? Not really, but at the same time, John Cena's going to do what John Cena's going to do. This was John calling his shots throughout the remainder of it, and clearly he was saying that I'm going to go out as John Cena, the actor, and give a moment of drama. I don't know if the fans were feeling what he was feeling. I honestly, and I said this before, I thought this was one of Cena's worst matches of the final run. Not from an execution standpoint, but just from a pro wrestler standpoint. The fact that the complete believability or suspension of disbelief, I should say, was thrown out the window. You're audibly hearing his calls, which is nothing new with Cena, but he's getting to the point that he's yelling his calls out to the crowd. You know, when he's holding up the five knuckle shuffle sign, he's like, this is the last time, guys. Are you sure? This is really it. This is the last time. To me, there was more suspense in the AJ Styles match where they were pulling, you know, which finisher was next. And that could come off as the most contrived match of the whole thing. But it was beautiful because it was just one surprise after another. Whereas this, there was no surprises. It was everything that fans thought it was going to be. And how people could think that Cena was going to let himself go out on top after hearing this guy talk all these years. And I like John Cena. I like a lot of what he has to say most of the time. I don't know where the vitriol comes from. The you effed up chance going out of Triple H as soon as he walks out to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a lot.
Yeah.
But then it comes from the other side, too, and I ask myself, well, what if I was one of the ones that had paid $10,000 to be there and leave with a happy ending? Did I get my happy ending? I think at the end of it all, we got it, but yeah, I don't know. Fans think just because you buy a ticket, you can run the show.
Yeah.
And that's where the separation, I think, is lacking from the days when you and I grew up watching wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. So more Cena from the month. He named his biggest mentor in WWE, of course, Vince, without a doubt, his quote. He broke the silence on his dad's viral reaction to his last opponent. He actually was very open about it. He and his dad essentially had a pretty estranged relationship and then finally kind of came together and in the past couple few years or so. So that, you know, that's always good to hear. He thinks he's going to be forgotten by fans before the Royal Rumble. You know, humble Cena, as always, thinking that's going to happen or claiming to. He has a 5-year ambassador contract with the company that officially begins, I guess, assuming the start of this year. This was a good one. He wanted to do 200 dates in his final WWE year. He wanted to work all the territory, you know, everywhere he could. And most people after were like, wait a minute, they didn't have 200 dates in a year anyway, like just because of reduced house show schedule and all that. So that was never going to happen. Cena said the CM Punk going to Saudi Arabia was awesome, and his apology made him cry. And I said that was one of his favorite moments in wrestling ever, which I thought was strange. He apologized for, quote unquote, going into business for himself at Crown Jewel because he made a custom ring intro for AJ Styles, handed to the ring announcer, and he had this profuse apology after, and I don't think anyone really cared one way or another. I don't think he's going to get into too much trouble. And he also made a cameo in the popular Apple show Pluribus, which was cool as well. So yeah, had more. That was really the month of Cena in December.
I think the interesting thing about this is that Cena is clearly trying to be the mentor, even when he doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
And you know, just trying to be that guy that you know, oh, well, you know, I did something wrong, and I'm going to own up to it, everybody. Hey, everybody, I'm owning up to what I did wrong here, because that's what a good, responsible person does. And sometimes I think he kind of strives to be that guy, and that's fine. That's his business. I didn't know that there was a huge estrangement between him and his dad until the story came out, although I could see it because John Cena Sr. is just he's a character, and I've never met the guy, but I'm sure he has lots of great things about him. But it's like when you saw Zack Ryder or Matt Cardona's dad for the first time, you're like, wow, this guy is in it, you know? So if John's trying to be a little less in it sometimes, maybe that's why he did that. And then, yeah, the comments about doing the 200 dates in the final year, I believe he would have done it. I believe he would have done the full calendar year. And then just something I want to go back to about the where the match was going to be on Saturday night's main event, that was the Kimmel interview, and he just threw it out lackadaisically, saying, I'm going to come on first and do my thing and blah, blah. And everybody heard, come on first, what? And then everybody else is going to be showcased. And so, yeah. But then in the end of that interview, he even said he was going to be the last one there. So,
yeah. Anyway, all right. Yeah. Let's go through the rest of this. We'll go a lot of WWE stuff. We'll go through this first chunk, and then I'll kick it over to you for thoughts on any of this that stands out. A report came out that there was no real heat on Paul Heyman for shoving a fan at WWE Survivor Series. If you remember that, the video came out of some kid running up to him and all that. Jey Uso sent a message to fans, please don't poke me or touch me in public. That was a theme we heard a lot. Rhea Ripley and Asuka and other people were really kind of, wrestlers are really kind of coming out more often and saying that they were, felt a little bit harassed in airports and all these other places. And it's just, I think we're going to have some sort of incident at some point, and perhaps it's going to make some change for how WWE does travel or something like that. But I feel like it's starting to grow a little bit more, but we'll see how it turns out in 2026. Of course, CM Punk versus Braun Breaker world title match set for the first Netflix Raw of 2026, which is tonight as we're talking now. Nikki Bella featured in a Google holiday campaign for the gift exchange. Becky Lynch declared that she's boycotting Raw until her demands are met. Now she's doing a whole Donald Trump thing on social media with all caps and all that. Kevin Nash denied Bret Hart's claims of a Vince McMahon Shawn Michaels romance. A headline I just had to get in here. Jacob Fatu expected back soon. CM Punk announced the passing of his dog Larry. Lana said the TKO has quote unquote really strict rules and regulations for WWE tickets. That's something that was we heard a lot throughout 2025. Raw fell out of the global top 10 shows on Netflix for the first time. Then we'll go back in, then go back out. They can thank Stranger Things for that, and probably will for at least another few weeks. Carmelo Hayes won the United States title on SmackDown. AJ Styles told John Cena he doesn't want a WWE farewell tour. And Netflix announced the intent to buy part of AEW partner WBD, so we'll see what happens there with Paramount and all that type of stuff. CM Punk joined the cast of a Netflix rom-com. Yes, a Netflix rom-com with CM Punk. Imagine saying that 5 years ago. Freddie Prinze Jr. claimed that ESPN is so unhappy with the WBD deal. That got a lot of people talking, of course. No source quoted or anything like that. Just he said he knows someone there, and they said that. And that was all it took for the content creators to go wild. Andrew Schultz, a comedian, expected to make more appearances with WWE in the year ahead. Braun Breaker emerged as potential favorite to win the Royal Rumble. Nick Khan said top guys in WWE are getting rich and the middle class have a really good life. Nick Khan said if celebrities want to come to WWE just to chase clout, quote unquote, we don't want them. Yeah, take that, celebrities. Bianca Belair said her finger injury is getting fixed. The company filed the trademark potential new wrestler name Fod to Wake. I believe that's how you pronounce that. Bailey held her Lodestone Women's Wrestling Camp. John Cena, always the mentor, made a full day appearance there, and also other stars attended during the weekend as well. Brock Lesnar made an appearance at the Las Vegas Sphere in an unexpected way as part of a Zach Brown concert in this video montage of him essentially doing a caveman fight with Zach Brown, both shirtless and loincloths, and something I don't think anyone ever expected to see, but this is what the culture we're in now. It was revealed that Jeff Cobb / JC Mateo signed a 3-year deal in 2025. The Rock Smashing Machine, you just mentioned that earlier, earned 2 Golden Globe nominations, of course, one for The Rock and one for his co-star Emily Blunt. AJ Styles is set to appear on a live Undertaker podcast episode. Logan Paul revealed details on the Scrap Travis Scott WWE match, saying he didn't show up, so finally some people are talking about that. Netflix revealed the premiere date for Unreal Season 2, which will be this month, January 20th. 5 episodes are airing there. TKO announced they have official truck partner of WWE, that being Ram. Stephanie McMahon shared that she suffered a miscarriage at one point in her life, and the Ring Boy lawsuit against WB and the McMahons will continue, but with some changes in terms of who the defendants can sue and all that as well. Thoughts about any of that?
Dear Lord.
Yes.
Okay, well, again, starting at the top and working our way through some of these, because obviously leaving thoughts on this would make a 6-hour show, but... The fact that no real heat on Paul Heyman for shoving a fan at Survivor Series, that's hilarious to me because that is a security issue. That's not a Paul Heyman issue. Paul Heyman was being a heel, and this kid came running up to him, and what else are you going to do? Honestly, it's one of the two. Let's see here. The Becky Lynch character change has been fantastic, absolutely. The Nikki Bella Google holiday campaign, the only thing that was funnier than that, because it was an AI campaign, right? They were saying that, look, this is part of a...
Okay, I never saw it. Yeah, yeah. It's
okay, yeah. So this was a fake movie poster that had Nikki Bella in it. And the only thing that was funnier than that was people saying, I've seen it. Good job, Nikki. It's great. yeah, rest in peace, Larry, for sure, the Punk family dog. No surprise, WWE has strict rules on tickets when they're going for $10,000 a piece in some places. I mean, if you, any company you work for, any $10,000 piece of equipment, guess what? You got to ask permission to give it away.
Right.
And then the AJ Styles thing really kind of surprises me and doesn't surprise me. I think that AJ is probably wrapping up sooner than we'd like to think. And I don't have any basis for that other than he's always been kind of understated whenever he would transfer places. I mean, there's been a couple times he was vocal about leaving and not being thrilled with things. Andrew Schultz being part of WWE, sure, that's good coverage for him. I mean, that's a really big comedian. That's also part of the Netflix relationship, obviously, as is the CM Punk rom-com, which, whatever. I mean... Good for him. If he's making money, quote, acting, great for Punk. I love CM Punk in many, many ways. Not always as a movie star, but it's okay. And then, injury stuff, things like that. FOD to Wake. I don't know what that is. I don't know who that could be. Yeah, I don't know of anybody. I mean, granted, they have like, what, 200 people that they have in there. Between their indie program and then the training facility and everything. We've talked about the Golden Globes already. And again, it just makes me wonder if there's some professional distancing from The Rock and The Rock from TKO. It doesn't make sense to me at all. Good on TKO for getting an official truck partner. Remember, Vince was always wanting to get vehicle deals. That was always the story, is that he always wanted vehicle sponsorships.
Right.
And give everything to get vehicles to be a part of his advertising programs. The only other thing on this I think I'll really touch on here is, because I just saw the trailer for it, is season 2 of Unreal about to launch. And it looks like they're really going to dive deep on a lot of stuff. They're going to talk about the Cena thing. They're talking to Naomi, who I think is a glaring miss on a lot of people's best of the years, only because she had to leave so early,
right,
due to the pregnancy. But they're talking to her and they talk about her life story, leaving and things like that. They're doing the Cena storyline. They're talking about everything that had to change going up to that. So it could be a really interesting season. So that's some of my thoughts on that chunk of the list.
All right, let's go to some more then.
We have
update on Brock Lesnar's potential retirement timeline, perhaps this August at SummerSlam in Minnesota, which would be fitting.
There's when he loses to Gunther.
That's right. The report out that that Kevin Owens and Natalya are set for roles on the next season of LFG. The company confirmed SmackDown back to 3 hours starting in January, which was confirmed, happened this past Friday. And Dry said WWE is allowing him to wrestle in Puerto Rico at this point, and that was before we would learn that he was free and clear. JD McDonough working through some injuries and revealed he had to undergo surgery. Jake Paul teased a possible WWE run, saying something's big coming. Who knows if that'll ever be true. Austin Theory was revealed as the mass mystery attacker on Raw and joined The Vision. Mick Foley parted ways with WWE over the Donald Trump relationship. It was revealed that the Royal Rumble would be starting early since it's happening in Saudi Arabia, so not like an 8 p.m. start time. I believe 3 o'clock, if I remember right, or maybe even a little bit earlier, but definitely an early start time for those of us in North America. Drake's OVO brand released images of their collaboration with WWE. There was a report that Netflix and could be looking to bring in WWE as part of their new podcast initiative. They're bringing over some Barstool stuff, some Ringer stuff as well, so the WWE podcast like the Cody Rhodes Show and other things. I assume that that is going to be heading over there at some point. Company set for a Stranger Things crossover show that'll be happening tonight on Raw, of course. Raquel Rodriguez was okay after a scary injury in Raw. She hit her head bump, took a head bump into the steps and was had her bell rung a bit, but she was okay. The company was ordered to provide the Department of Justice and SEC records as part of a shareholder lawsuit. Triple H is featured in an official White House video as part of the President's Council he's on. Tiffany Stratton posted a throwback clip of a scary WWE practice moment. This is for a ladder match, and she took quite a spill. Unusual for someone to share a practice clip, because I know we it's 2025, everyone kind of knows what the deal is, but that really is like, hey, we actually practice all this stuff just like this, even ladder bumps and so on. So that was something. Andrade, as I mentioned earlier, was free to sign elsewhere. After his no-compete was waived by the company, WWE said Javon Evans is a soon-to-be free agent on the main roster. Now he's, of course, expected for Raw. There's a report that came out that the company is divided on signing Danhausen when his contract expires in a few months. More commentary team changes always seems to happen with college football and Pat McAfee and Joe Tessitore and everyone in between. A Hulk Hogan Netflix docuseries is moving forward. Seth Rollins revealed he has 3 years left in his contract, and Joe Hendry, as I mentioned earlier, officially getting the call-up to SmackDown. Thoughts about any of that?
You know what? I want to start with probably the only politically charged story I'm going to touch during this whole thing, and that is the Mick Foley parting ways over his the relationship with Donald Trump. Sorry, that's my...
That might be Mick Foley right now.
That is, exactly. Yeah. Oh, hi, Mick. Just talking about you. Anyway, Mick is a guy who I've interacted with a few times over the years, and not enough to say I know the guy well. I've got friends that have worked with him and booked him and promoted him for things, and he's always been 100% on the level, 100% on the level. What I appreciated was even the most staunch Trump supporters, i.e. Glenn Jacobs, coming out and saying, look, we're going to disagree politically, but Mick is doing what he feels is right. And for anybody to stand up and say something one side or the other these days usually gets, that's why I don't like talking about this stuff, because it gets all sorts of vitriol from everywhere. Yep. Mick's not getting any vitriol. You know, there's the occasional MAGAers or Trumpers or, you know, even just people that hate wrestling or whatever that I'm sure are riding them for it. But realistically, the guy has done the most diplomatic thing he can. He says, look, we're not going to take any extra bookings, not any extra money, things like that. When the deal's done, the deal's done. I'm going to move on, and here's why. So I think that that shows a level of respect that few people can earn across the board, whether you agree or not with them. So I thought that was really cool and really brave of him to do in such a charged climate. Especially in an industry that frankly, you know, lends itself a lot to that demographic, lends itself a lot to that audience, and with the company that does the same thing. So, you know, we shouldn't feel bad for Mick Foley. He'll be fine. I'm pretty sure he's got enough money in the bank over the years to take care of himself and do what he wants. What I worry about are other wrestlers or other people that can't afford that. luxury and say to themselves, you know, this is the only way I can make my living. This is the only way I can do what I can do. And if they weren't maybe as revered, if they were to do the same thing, looking at Mick as an example and as a hero in this case, or even just someone they want to be mentored from. And that's where I worry about, because Lord knows if there's one thing wrestling fans love to do, it's tell anybody why they're wrong for any reason. So, yeah. I mean, good on him for that. As for other stories that come through this thing here, hooray, early start time for the Royal Rumble. You know, the one thing about all these overseas ones, especially when they get to the other side of the earth, I get to watch a pay-per-view and still have a day. That's...
Yep.
I think every fan in North America and the Western Hemisphere agrees with that, if nothing else.
100%.
The collaborations galore. Yeah, this is what TKO does. This is what most pro sports franchises and anybody with half a brain for marketing does. So you're just going to see more and more stuff pumped out, and good on them for that. The Stranger Things crossover. Did you watch any Stranger Things? Were you a fan?
Oh, yeah, all of it.
Okay, so you believe then is what you're saying.
I believe.
Tear. But, you know, I fell off that show, but I was like, oh, they're wrapping it up. I better get back in. And I was fully back in again. I loved it. And so for them to capitalize off the success of that, it only makes me wish the Stranger Things finale was this week. For the exposure and the promo, yeah, you know,
it's unusual to see a collaboration after a show has wrapped, but I guess it has a real long tail effect that they assume, and they're gonna be like, "We'll take anything we can get."
Well, there's that, and much like John Cena, they're not gonna let it die, right? John Cena has been mentioned on every WWE TV show since the retirement by numerous people. So let's do the same thing with Stranger Things. There's a new behind the scenes documentary that's launching as well. So that'll be a tie-in for that as well. And then, yeah, with all these talents coming in, it's going to be an exciting time. The Danhausen thing, I like Danhausen as a character, as a wrestler. You know, I don't mind him, you know. But I can see where the divide would be. Although, again, WWE, use that big marketing brain of yours. The toys, the figures, the merchandise, the T-shirts. This guy doesn't need to do a lockup. And he could be making millions. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I think it's all pretty interesting stuff here.
Should we predict, or I'll predict that Chris Jericho is going to come out as Vecna tonight and reveal himself? You know, that could be, I mean, that'd be the perfect crossover. You know, if this is happening tonight, which I think most people assume, I mean, that'd be the perfect thing. It might take him a while to get out of the prosthetics, but, you know, just saying.
Yeah. I love that, actually. I love that idea, and I love the idea that that, if not Vecna, then he comes out as Delightful Derek.
Wow. Oh, my God. That'd be a deep
I'm calling cut, it now.
That'd be a perfect cut. Perfect cut. All right, let's go to the last.
Suck my fat one. I can say those words. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. If he says one, he's got to get involved in this somehow. You feel it.
Oh, God. Somebody has to say suck my fat one tonight.
100%. Vince McMahon would be rolling on the floor if he'd be able to. Let's go to this final chunk of WB stuff. Backlash, the 2026 location revealed, that being Puerto Rico in May. The last time they ran Puerto Rico, it was a wild night, and I think really kind of set the tone for all international shows in the future in terms of crowds and each international crowd trying to compete and trying to one-up each other in terms of reactions and all that. Trick Williams officially declared himself a free agent on SmackDown, of course, officially getting signed or the call-up on this past Friday show. Vince Russo responded after Seth Rollins called him a hanger-on and an idiot. Liv Morgan made her in-ring return at a house show. Heisman Trophy finalist Diego Pavia got involved at a WWE live event. Again, another thing TKO likes to do. Any athletes' interactions, they'll take, even if it makes the wrestlers kind of look less than. Chris Jericho addressed his possible WWE return, saying, "You never know." I think we'll know in a couple hours. Gail Kim said she turned down a WWE offer. Sucks, but she had to. That's what she said. Kevin Nash critiqued CM Punk, saying he thinks he's done. And it was mentioning about him wrestling in a T-shirt. And Punk then responded by wearing two T-shirts on a house show, taking off one and then revealing the other one.
That was one of the funniest things I've seen in the last couple of weeks.
That was good. New documents show that this was from the other day. It showed that Endeavor executives anticipated Vince McMahon's 2023 return and selling to them. Of course, this was part of the whole WWE shareholder lawsuit and some documents that came out for discovery. And so we'll see how that turns out. Penta made his return from a shoulder injury on Raw, helped Rey Mysterio. The Usos rejoined the tag team division and won the WWE World Tag Team titles on Raw. Sheamus underwent shoulder surgery. WWE iCarve content was set to leave Peacock at this. They did the end of the year. And then, lo and behold, a lot of it went to Netflix, listing a bunch of WPLEs and other events as coming next week. Of course, this is happening in the last week of December. Maxxine Dupri and Cam Hendricks officially married, and current and former stars in attendance. Meechan suffered a shoulder injury. Say that five times fast. Sidelined from the live tours, this sudden rash of shoulder injuries breaks out in WWE. The relationship with Tony Hinchcliffe, also a comedian, expected to continue. This was a strange one. Nikki Bella said the fearless lock that she did is different than John Cena's submission, and she responded to some thank you Cena chants on Raw. Of course, they have a romantic past and all that, so she talked about that. Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns' official first look for Street Fighter was revealed in a very brief trailer. There was an update on what led to Roman Reigns defeating Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 39, that coming out of those documents. And then also Dave Meltzer pointed that Reigns was the one that pitched the idea for Reigns defeating Cody Rhodes the first time, and then leading to the bigger rematch the year after. And then the buzz for a third match between them has started to begin, and we'll see if that happens. Matt Hardy wants a generational dream match at Mania, always trying to get back in WWE. He wants the Usos, the New Day, and the Hardys to have a three-way. He might even say a ladder match. Maybe just a three-way at Mania. And Chad Gable expected back any point this month. Thoughts about any of that?
Well, first of all, I'm only taking that generational dream match if Demolition gets involved to represent that generation.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to think of like 80s tag teams that are still around in any form or whatever. But yeah, let's start off with the no-brainer business decision on this one, and we're gonna love watching it. They're gonna love having it. A backlash heading back to Puerto Rico. Holy God, that first one was something, and that set the bar. I felt, you know, for France and for even Australia and everywhere. You know, like the fans just go nuts for these international PLEs, and it's really fun to watch as someone in North America who usually watches people just, you know, sitting on their phones half the time. It has gotten better, though. I will say this. Fans in AEW and WWE seem more engaged when they're watching the show these days than maybe even a couple years ago. And I think it's because of the shift in fan base and the shift in popularity. So I think there's more actual interest in what's going on in the show. Yeah, again, talent changes. Trick Williams, we've been waiting for this call-up for a while. That makes sense. Vince Russo and Seth Rollins, I mean, I got no comment. I got no grief with Vince Russo. I don't know the guy, but I do love Seth Rollins always being honest to a T. And it's funny because, you know, the friendship and relationship I have with Brett, like, you know, when Brett had the comments about Seth, that's Brett's biggest flaw, is that he's honest to a T. It's that, you know, he sometimes will have no filter, and Seth is the same guy in a lot of ways, so that's kind of neat. I'm assuming by the time people are listening to this, we've already heard Break the Walls Down with the Vecna costume, like you said. The Gail Kim thing doesn't surprise me, and that goes back to the Mick Foley thing too, because she's had some pretty strong principles about where she feels she belongs in the wrestling industry, and WWE was not a part of that. We all know, well, if you listen to these shows, you probably know how she left WWE and why, and to not go back, I mean, good for her. That's, again, her standing up for her principles, which you might not agree with them, but you got to admire her conviction on them. Dave and I just talked about the Endeavor thing with the text messages and everything, and I think the whole funniest thing that came out of that was Nick Khan trying to be coy about, hey, let's talk about this on Niglas or whatever they said for Signal, the app that makes your messages disappear. And it came out that Vince had to be explained to what Niglas or whatever was.
Yeah, what the blue hell is that?
Yeah, so then Nick Khan, read it back. So again, you don't want either of these guys setting your privacy protection on anything, okay? Because it's just, again, show grandpa how to take the selfie moments here. The Usos back together as a tag team, that makes a ton of sense to me, because what else are you going to do with them? And Maxine Dupri, congratulations. The Michin shoulder injury, I like that they didn't make a big deal out of it. They didn't make it a big beat down. They said, look, it happened on a house show. This is what happened. She'll be back, and she's coming for it. And then again, more stuff about the lawsuit, the class action suit. And Dave brought up a point, and I agree with him 100% here. It's kind of hard to prove damages when you're making more money off the stock, doesn't it?
Yeah, he said that a lot.
Like, that's going to be the biggest problem with that whole lawsuit. And yeah, I've already talked about Demolition, obviously. So I think we're good. Oh, the Street Fighter posters. Okay. I love how action figure-y Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and everybody else look in their Street Fighter costumes. They couldn't look more cartoonish if they tried. And yeah. So I am not expecting fine cinema out of this, but I'm expecting to be entertained. And it looks like they're going to do it.
I like it. Well, you've been very generous with your time. I said 30 minutes. We've already gone 45. But there was a lot of WWE stuff to get to. So,
hey, man, I'm happy. I can talk about this stuff for days. So.
Oh, yeah. So before we let you go, let's get a chance to have people, yeah, where they can hear you, feel you, experience you. The floor is yours.
Oh, well, the easiest way is celebratewrestling.com. Is kind of the umbrella we have, McGuire on Wrestling, as well as some other great podcasts collectively throughout the week. Our stuff is always free, and that's because we're not coming for anybody. We just kind of do this for sport, and if you want to support the show through donations or buying t-shirts and stuff like that, that's cool. But we all just love talking about wrestling. I've always found other ways to make money happen, so... That's where you can find the shows. Of course, wherever your fine podcasts are downloaded. And also, launching on some new radio stations. This is an actual wrestling radio show, McGuire on Wrestling, every week. We're affiliated with 4 stations right now. And then this coming Sunday, depending on when this airs, January the 11th, we'll be making our debut on AM 1150 News Talk, which is out of Central British Columbia, which is one of the biggest imprints that I've ever had, because these AM News Talk stations go on forever, and we're going to be reaching a whole new audience, both in Southern and Interior BC, probably down to the US. But let's face it, it's the World Wide Web. So, you know, celebratewrestling.com or any of these radio stations you find there is where you can find our shows.
Yeah. And where can they follow you on social? Say they have a radio station, they want to reach out and they want to syndicate your show. How do I get in touch with you?
You know what? You can just reach out to me directly through celebratewrestling.com, Instagram at celebratewrestling. There, and this is kind of confusing. We have 2 Facebook pages going on right now, because when I first started it, I wanted to kind of gatekeep it a little bit and just keep bots out, and also keep like jerky fans that just want to start trouble out. So we do have like a private one. Mm-hmm. If you join Facebook, there's the Celebrate Wrestling McGuire and Wrestling page. But if you just look up Celebrate Wrestling Radio and Podcasts on Facebook, you can find us there as well. Everything else is at McGuire Show, MCG. UIRE. I don't expect anybody to remember that off of first listen, but yeah, just find me here. And then, of course, tagged in this fine podcast description, no doubt, Josh Nason.
That's right. Well, I appreciate the time, Mike, today, and appreciate the time you've had me on your show. Always have good conversations there, and looking forward to having more ahead. Mike McGuire, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, I'm very excited to have my guest today, part of 2 guests today in this final edition of the interview series. Someone I've been trying to figure out the best time to get him on the show, and I did, of course, right at the year end. And somebody you've heard quite a bit if you watch Tony Khan interviews and so on, but he also has been working for Voice of Wrestling forever, covering Dragon Gate, does the Open the Voice Gate podcast, been doing that forever. Also does, are you still doing the Michinoku Pro
yes.
podcast? Okay, great. Right, called These Days, a Michinoku Pro retrospective series, and yeah, you've seen him and heard him quite a bit. Case Lowe, Case, thanks so much for stopping by and hanging out.
Thank you. I think that is the apt description, that I have been with Voices of Wrestling for quote forever. It does feel that way. I'm 26 now. I've been with Voices of Wrestling since I was 15. That's an embarrassingly large portion of my life. But I'm very happy they continue to keep the lights on and allow me to do basically whatever I want to do. And I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, this is great. And I've been learning in getting to know Rich quite a bit. Rich has been on this series for years. and listing some of the flagship and other stuff. It's a very Midwestern focused entity, which is great, right? Because like the Observer is very West Coast. I'm on the East Coast. But but I've noticed that in talking with people and learning more about you all the time. It's very Midwest, which is good.
Yeah, like I mean, I'm friends with Rich. I see him out and about. Chris Samsa, who does stuff for Voices of Wrestling, he lives very close to me. I just saw him at a Third Eye Blind show last month. We had a great time there. It's a nice Midwest representation, and you know, again, for a lot of these people, they've become very, very good friends and people that I've known for a large chunk of my life. So whether it's you know getting together at an AEW show or literally just running into them around town, you're right. We've got a nice little Midwest coalition going.
Yeah, and you have your other job, which is, of course, Q101, mm-hmm. which is, this is my kind of music, Chicago's Alternative, which
That's
is
right.
great. Check them out on YouTube and on the web and all that. How'd you get started working for them?
I went to college. I'm from Indiana originally, and I always, you know, the plan for most of my life was to get out to California and go to film school out there. And I, especially growing up, was really interested in television, television writing and sitcoms and things like that. And just by happenstance, got an email from a college here, Columbia College Chicago, that was offering a comedy writing and performance degree, which if you're a parent listening, do not let your child do it. I would not recommend it. It took a lot of convincing to let my parents let me go off on that venture, but came to Chicago and started doing stand-up and doing improv, and I always enjoyed it. I mean, by that point, I had been with Voices of Wrestling for a few years, and always knew that I liked the world of podcasting and knew I liked the world of radio. And just through, I think, a lot of luck, but some people would say hard work, met the right people, got in the right people's ears, ended up, I was the last intern the station ever had because they changed their intern policy. And that was in 2019. And they just haven't been able to get rid of me since. And then I've been the executive producer for what is now one of the three biggest morning shows in Chicago for almost 3 years now. And I, you know, it's the only job I've had in my adult life. It's the only job I want to have for the time being. I'm immensely happy there. And as of 2 years ago, they started letting me talk to, you know, I have a series called A Case For where I talk to almost any band that I want to, you know, a lot of up and coming bands or bands that are maybe a little heavier for commercial radio, things like that. Like I talk to a lot of punk bands and then like some alt country bands and things that I'm into like that. But, you know, we got in touch with AEW a few years ago and they really like the work that I do. And for me, like for my job, the wrestling interviews are the least important thing that I do. It's a pure vanity project,
yeah.
but AEW and I have a good relationship, and my boss likes that people watch the YouTube videos and enjoy them the way that they do. So it has all worked out to an incredible degree. If I could tell my 16-year-old self that this is how I was spending my days, it would be very hard to believe.
That's great. I will tell you, not just because you're here, but because I've listened to so many hours of Tony Khan interviews since AEW started. You have a great rapport. You're one of the best interviewers I've heard of him, because you come at it, this is just my perspective, you come at it with a, you know your shit, which is number one, right? You don't ask them the same questions everyone else does, and they clearly hasn't listened to stuff before and all that, which is key if you're interviewing anyone. You don't rehash the same things. And you two have a really good rapport. Like, he trusts you. He understands if you have to ask quote-unquote tough questions, which for most of us are just questions that we want answered and curious about. And you in a way that he clearly trusts you and likes you, and he's come back. I think you've interviewed, what, two or three times at least, right?
We have done, over the course of this last year, we have done 4 in-studio interviews.
Oh, wow.
And then a Zoom last summer as well, which is how we first got acquainted. And I tell people all the time, you know, I don't have any sort of relationship with Tony outside of when he comes in to promote stuff. We don't talk, we don't text, but when we are in the same vicinity as each other, I really like the level of care that he gives me as an interviewee, and he seems to enjoy being interviewed by me. And it's worked out, I think, for both parties incredibly well. And this is maybe a larger media problem when you talk about access and how important access is for certain outlets. But like I just said, you know, if wrestling interviews went away for me tomorrow, it wouldn't impact my job or how I pay my rent at all. So I have a little bit more freedom. You know, I interviewed MVP recently and it got very contentious, and it was a, you know, a fun conversation with her PR guy afterwards of like, oh, that was weird for everybody. But it doesn't, the access to AEW doesn't mean anything for me. It's nice to have, but I don't need it. So I feel as an interviewer that I perhaps have a little bit more freedom than other outlets that are really, really desperate for interviews or desperate for a headline or whatever. And everybody's got their own hustle, you know, all respect to everybody involved. But for me, it does feel nice to be able to sort of shoot from the hip a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. The MVP, I'm glad you brought that up. That was a good one. Cause yeah, you basically, I don't say call them out, but you push back on some things about, you know, I mean, I do work for the Dave Meltzer website, but you push back on some of those things. And for him to, you know, for Kim to kind of completely dismiss, you know, Dave's importance or anything is just, they're clear there's something there. He just doesn't like him. But yeah, I think it's hard to deny that Dave's had a positive impact on history and so on and so forth. And without him, I think the industry would be a lot different now.
This has become, you know, it's funny that I don't want to say we work for competing websites, but we work for different websites, but it's really become a crusade with some of us at Voices of Wrestling is to make sure that Dave's historical importance is not lost. And it's very, very upsetting. You know, I have people in my life who like wrestling and like the type of wrestling that I like, you know, like it on a deeper level. And they are so dismissive of Dave. And I can't wrap my head around it. Again, I'm not friends with Dave. We have a very friendly relationship. You know, when we need something from the other person, we're not afraid to ask, but I was really bothered by his comments in that interview. And I think enough time has passed. I was saying this to some people at Voices, but you know, after the camera stopped rolling, cause that was the Dave stuff was in the middle of that interview. And then I got out of it and we were able to talk about a bunch of other stuff and it, you know, it was fine for what it was. But once the camera stopped rolling, the only thing that he talked about until he left the building was how much he hated Dave. And it was extremely uncomfortable because he wouldn't stop talking about it. And I kept on saying the same thing. I said, hey, you know, I like him. I have a good relationship with him. I think you're a little ill-informed. And it was really uncomfortable, just the vitriol that he spoke about Dave with. And I, you know, I don't need anybody to like anybody, but I am very saddened by the industry of anti-Dave Meltzer people. And I really think the wrestling world is worse off with that being what has almost become a prevailing thought. It makes me really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if MVP knows. I mean, Tony Khan does pay Dave, right? I mean, if he's on the payroll. That's what we've been told forever. And I'm still waiting on the checks.
Tony Khan pays the Voices of Wrestling too. So again, I'm waiting on those checks as well.
The people. Well, speaking of AEW, let's talk some December. And as I always tell people, this end of the show or the end of the series, it always feels like, oh, what are we going to talk about? Stuff just happened last month. There's a lot of interesting things here that's going to set up some things in the future and so on. So we'll go into AEW Ring of Honor. Of course, we'll lead off with World's End, which just happened, of course, a couple of weeks ago, and in a very familiar spot, the Now Arena, of course. And Jon Moxley winning the Continental Classic. He split his tooth in two during that match, which of all the crazy things that he has done, just tripping in the steps, that was something else. Of course, MJF winning the AEW World Title at the end of the night, which received mixed reviews by people, like everything does. Ortiz made his return officially on the pre-show to aid Eddie Kingston as that tag team starts to take off. Tony Khan said it was going into this as a clean sellout at the Now. And Adam Cole appeared during the pre-show saying, hopefully we're seeing a lot more of me in 2026. We're not sure what that means, but hopefully, you know, we'll hopefully be seeing him. And I think that's going to be positive for him mentally. And everyone loves to see Adam Cole. And Tony Khan confirmed two new AEW signings during the night, High End and Maya World. And yeah, so what's your thoughts overall on World's End, the Continental Classic, how the final four and how the final two it turned out, and I guess the show as a whole?
Yeah, I thought it was a very enjoyable show on a year where I thought they had a number of really enjoyable pay-per-views, and it still seems to be sort of the highest batting average possible. If you're looking for a great wrestling show, you can debate the pacing of it and length of it, and I wish AEW pay-per-views were shorter. I mean, admittedly, this show happened in the Chicago market, but it was in Hoffman Estates, which is in the suburbs. It's a little harder for me to get to in the city, and I started doing the math of this show's not going to end until midnight. I then have to have somebody that I would go to the show with and give me a ride to the train station, I'm going to get back at 2 a.m. I don't want to go. Like, it was a real, you know, decision that I had to make. But in terms of the quality of this show, the Continental Classic has become such a win for this promotion. And I wish it was presented. a little differently. I wish it was presented more seriously. I wish there was fewer roll-ups and fewer heels cheating in the traditional pro wrestling sense. And I do wish it was maybe not presented like the UWF of the 1980s, you know, Akira Maeda and company, but I wish it was presented even more seriously than it is. But I do enjoy the serious presentation of it. I seem to be a little bit higher on Okada Takeshita than most people. I know a lot of people were very turned off by that finish. Mm-hmm. I put the blame, because I guess the blame has to go somewhere. To me, it seemed like referee Paul Turner was the one that was the most out of position and made that finish look as awkward as it did. But if you take away the final 15 seconds of that match, it was utterly thrilling. And I know we're going to get more Okada Takeshita in the future. So I was on board with that. And then Moxley versus Fletcher was one of the best matches of the year worldwide. You could talk about Dragon Gate, New Japan, CMLL, AEW. It's a top 10 worldwide match for me this year. Kyle Fletcher, to me, was the best wrestler in the world in 2025. I know we're going to unveil the FSM 50 over at voicesofwrestling.com here pretty soon, which is the ranking of the 50 best wrestlers in that given year. And I don't know where Fletcher will finish overall, but from my first draft until my final draft, he was number one. And to be able to sort of spike the football in the end zone the way that he did with that Moxley match, I thought was rather impressive. And then as I talked about with Tony Khan, you know, Moxley had a real shaky start to the year. I've always been a little bit more into the Death Riders than I think the public consensus has. There have been things I've outright hated. There have been minor directions during this run that I have not been a fan of whatsoever. But I've always given that group a little bit more patience and a little bit more time than the average person, because I've seen the larger picture and I've tried to really give credence to where they're going with it. And to have this night where Moxley comes in, you know, I guess as a de facto babyface against Fletcher, but then to fully turn and have the crowd behind him the way that he did in the Okada match, that's marvelous stuff. I was so into that. I wish Moxley versus Okada would have been a little bit better, but we got Moxley versus Fletcher. We got 9/10 of a great match between Okada and Takeshita. And I thought once again, the Continental Classic was one of the easy highlights for AEW this year. I just wish that level of, I don't want to say real sports presentation, but just a more serious, streamlined presentation, I wish that was the default setting in this promotion.
Yeah. Going into the tournament, I thought the way everything had been set up for months that I was looking at the wrong story. I was looking at, this is going to be Takeshita Okada in the finals. Mm-hmm. Takeshita wins, and that's the end of him with the Don Callis family. He just takes off from there, and then we get, you know, whatever we get after that. I did not see this being kind of the story of the John Moxley redemption tour. And then and at the end of it, I was like, okay. So, and then of course, as he's, you know, doing his post-match promo, I think most people, at least myself, were expecting, okay, is this going to be when he gets jumped or anything like that? But they didn't do that. And I was like, okay, so we're just going to, it may not happen, might not. But I came out of it thinking, huh, I would have, I guess we'll see kind of how it turns out with the Takeshita Okada thing, and clearly New Wrestle Kingdom should make some changes or will affect that. But it was fascinating. It was fascinating to see, and yeah, the Fletcher, you know, Fletcher just continues to kind of climb that ladder of like, he's up next, and that's good. Yeah. But yeah, I think what I came out of this whole thing thinking, really, this whole year, AEW really, I think, strengthened their world title upper level, more so than in years past, where it's like you could have seven guys, maybe eight legit, where people are like, these are the guys. And I think you've done a really good job building that upper level of this is the top level crew, and they all work at a high level.
I agree. You know, one of the things that I talk about on Open the Voice Gate a lot, which is our weekly Dragon Gate podcast that primarily covers contemporary Dragon Gate stuff, and it's the same feed as our Michinoku Pro retrospective podcast. But, it, you know, something that I bring up a lot is we're in an overconsumption era. You know, I always reference this, and it's an odd reference, but O.J. Simpson, when he passed away, he died on a Thursday, and by Monday we had all moved on. And yeah, I was like, this is crazy, because he's one of the most interesting people to ever live. We could unpack this story for weeks, and it just, time moves on. We see this with global politics. You know, every day there's a new story, so nothing's a story. And one of the things that we've hit, and I think this is largely an issue in 2019 and beyond, and really it's something that exists throughout the entire existence of AEW, is we're just consuming so much that nothing sticks with us because there's always something new. We did our year-end award show last week, and I made the comment to Mike, I go, it's December 30th, but by the time people hear this, it's going to be the 31st. The All Japan show on the 31st is going to happen, and then you've got 6 days of wrestling in Japan in a row, and then like by the time some people get to the show, it's old news. I'm so glad you do something like this where we can really synthesize the year. The reason I bring all this up is a lot of the time I'll speak in sort of hypothetical compilation DVDs. And I go, you know, if this happened 15 years ago, there would be a DVD that would come out that would go step by step through this feud or step by step through this rivalry, have all of this guy's matches in 1 year. And I think the overarching story of the Callis family from the beginning to where we are now, by and large, has been handled to an astonishingly well degree. It's the thing that I'm most consistently interested in AEW, with the exception of maybe, you know, the CMLL guys coming in, and even now Hechicero's in that group, so I'm very much locked in there. I think if the Don Callis family existed, say, from 2004 to 2006, I think we'd all be at a point where we'd go, wow, this is incredible long-term storytelling. They have weaved and threaded a few different needles throughout the group's existence, and you have this looming Takeshita Okada thing. And I'm not sure they're getting the credit for that they deserve, but, you know, a Dynamite from last week might as well have been from a year ago. Yeah. Everything is old, yeah, and we always have to consume something new now, and it's going to make defining legacies and careers going forward really, really tricky. And I think something like the Don Callis family, the legacy of this is going to suffer as a result.
That's a great point. Coming out of this, of course, William Regal taking to Twitter and saying, he didn't comment much, he says, but he said essentially that this dropping yourself in your head isn't worth the pain. He had this very long kind of impassioned thing without mentioning Kyle Fletcher at all, of course, talking about the Kyle Fletcher bump in the Moxley match. And the industry kind of took hold. You know, Piper Niven had a response. Kenny Omega chimed in, actually in support of what William Regal was saying. Jeff Jarrett saying wrestling is not going in reverse, going the opposite direction. Ivar saying life-altering, talking about his neck injury. So, you know, everything turns tribal on social. But there was a lot, you know, I think when Omega talked and so on, I didn't really get the tribal sense from William Regal. I just got the sense of, like, he was just, this is, you know, what wrestlers do, and Dave has talked about this name one, like, the older guys will say, don't make the same mistakes I made. This is what Barry Parent says, all this, and then the kids are going to do what they're going to do, you know? And I think it's an interesting topic. I don't think it's going to change anything. It's more of awareness. It's just kind of one of these things that gets brought up. What was your take on this whole fallout from this?
I thought Regal came across like a giant loser, and I know that might sound harsh to some people, but, all right, did he mean it to be tribalistic? I don't know, but I do know that it came 12 hours removed from a Jon Moxley Kyle Fletcher match in which Kyle Fletcher landed on his head and was fine, by the way, no injury reports from Fletcher. And it wasn't a tweet coming after an NXT show where overly ambitious, poorly trained wrestlers are dropping themselves on their head, or on a Monday Night Raw where you see, another point I always make is, you know, I think that the thing that Dragon Gate actually struggles most with right now is wrestling has taken so much from Dragon Gate that a lot of wrestling companies now are just doing a lesser version of their style. And it makes the high end Dragon Gate stuff stand out so much more because you go, wow, they are still the very best at this, but it waters down what at one point made them so special. And you'll see it on Raw and you'll see it on SmackDown where guys will take a move that has been primarily done in Dragon Gate and they'll do it poorly and they'll get hurt from it. And, you know, I think Regal's upset that Kyle Fletcher doesn't, or as of this recording, doesn't want to join him in Orlando and do headlock takeover class. And I found the tweet to be full of loser behavior. And I don't know. I don't want to hear it from Regal, who was doing shoot headbutts on Velocity and spent most of his career sweating out booze from the night before while he was in the ring. His point might be noble to one degree, but he's not the guy that I want to hear it from. And it's not the time that I want to hear it. I was more bothered by that tweet than I'd like to admit, even though it's very clearly coming across now, but I wasn't a fan of it whatsoever.
Good. I like that. I like that. This is one of the reasons I want to talk to you. I love it. It's good when people have strong opinions. I love that. I love that. All right. Let's get into this first chunk of AEW headlines, and I'll kick it over to you for anything on this list that may have stuck out. You have some thoughts on AEW announced Revolution returning to LA in March at the Crypto.com Arena. MVP explained having to protect Bobby Lashley from being way too giving. This is a whole discussion he's had with talking about basically the Hurt Business, the Hurt Syndicate being strong. And there's this, you know, this whole discussion about will they lose to people? They always seem to sell for the Gates of Agony and certain people. And he described this, and I think he said is the Black Brock Lesnar. I believe he said that in one of the interviews.
That certainly sounds right.
Yes, I think he said that. Paul White, remember him talking about retirement, saying he's not ready to hang up the boots yet. And he thinks that Baron Corbin could help AEW's product. The company announced a partnership with Blacksmith Apparel. Chris Jericho, quote unquote, pretty sure he'll be wrestling somewhere in 2026. We don't know where, but we assume it'll be WWE. Could be as soon as tonight. Might not be. Tony Khan said AEW has closed the gap on WWE in a very meaningful way. I don't think he actually explained what that was. Darby Allin hospitalized, not clear to compete. He was pulled from the Continental Classic. Jack Perry replaced him. I don't know if there was a big buzz for this when it happened, but I think he came out of the tournament a lot better than he went in. I think he had a lot more respect, and I think he's kind of starting to find his groove again, which is good. Now he'll have more of a chance now that Luchasaurus is injured. The company signed Lena Cross to a deal. Jim Ross finally going to return, going to attend an upcoming show in Tulsa, actually this Wednesday. Sarah Stock, this is a whole story this year, had this tweet about corruption and negligence are running unchecked at AEW, and didn't really had just kind of these people that are to blame, but didn't really say why, and just the strange year of Sarah Stock and social media continues. Chuck Taylor underwent neck surgery. Sting's son, Stephen Borden, made his AEW in-ring debut in a dark match. The Babes of Wrath won the first ever AEW Women's Tag Team Championship at Winter's Coming. Billy Gunn, managing a new team in a AEW dark match. I don't know if they've actually competed since then, but maybe some a hat tip of what he's going to be doing in the future. Eddie Kingston said he's got 6 more years on his AEW deal. That's a long deal. And he's also going to retire after 30 years in the business. He's done doing his final indie run. Jack Perry suffered an injury at Winter's Coming to his ankle. And let's see, John Cena responded to Samoa Joe's AEW Dynamite shout out in one of his matches, the salute. Tony Khan announced the AEW Dark returning for one night. He wants to bring that back full time so badly. Bobby Lashley, we just talked about him, injured and out for quite some time. Layla Gray said that she suffered a torn ACL in a recent match, so she's going to be out for quite some time. Still competed in a bodybuilding competition, I believe. The Blade returned to the ring after nearly 2 years away due to injuries. Of course, not for AEW, but for the Indies. The company revealed they'll be heading to Vancouver, Canada in April for Dynasty 2026. And RJ City explained that the reason for his AEW YouTube series to end. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, there's a few things I have thoughts on here. I miss the Paul White, I'm not ready to hang up the boots yet story, and the added on anecdote about Baron Corbin. That's going to be a hard pass for me on both of those. I don't need any of that. That sounds pretty brutal. I found the, I guess that's in your next set of notes. I'm going to hold off on that.
Okay.
But the other thing here, I guess I'll just ask you because I don't really have a take on it, but I'm curious to know what your level of, dare I say, tolerance for Chris Jericho is as we enter 2026. Does him wrestling in AEW or WWE have any interest to you?
No, I think he's perfect to go back to WWE. It makes the perfect sense for everyone involved. He got everything out of that AEW run. They got everything out of him. There was nothing left to wring out of the rag. And that, you know, the learning tree thing just didn't hit for anyone. And everyone knew it. And he had a nice 6 months off. Once he was not at All In, it's like he's not coming back. Like, you just tell. I think he is perfect for this era of WWE. He'll come back as a conquering hero. He's not going to be an every week talent, I don't think. And the audience will just they'll eat it up, and he'll do his thing. He'll be there for a couple of years. He'll go in the Hall of Fame, and you know, that'll pretty much be it. And he'll be kind of in the mainframe for them. So he just seems at this point of his career and life and all this stuff, and you know, he's going to do one of these part-time things that all these other guys do. And this is it's one of the reasons where it's tough for a lot of young guys to get the push, is because these part-time deals, people come back and they take up a lot of oxygen, a lot of TV time. And I think he's going to be one of them, and he'll fit right in. So I think it works out pretty good.
I'm with you. You know, I really enjoyed a lot of Jericho's AEW run. I'm incredibly bullish on Brian Keith as a talent, and I was actually very excited when Keith got straddled with Chris Jericho because I thought that would have meant more TV time for him, and for whatever reason, that act just did not click in the way that I think anybody was hoping for, even if I liked the individual people involved. But I'm, you know, one of the things that I think we need to stress more is it's good when guys jump around. It's good to leave the territory. And mm-hmm. and you're right. I think they got all the toothpaste out of the tube with Jericho and AEW. If he were to come back now, you know, even though I like the guy, I wouldn't be too enthused by it. But, you know, he can go be on Netflix and I won't have to see him. So it'll be fine because I'm not gonna watch yeah. that. So it'll be fine.
Yeah, it's just it's not like what match would he come back for an AEW that people want to see, right? I mean, if he's gonna do this retirement tour, or I just think there's more quote unquote fresh stuff for him in WWE. And again, that audience, they don't want to be challenged. You know what I mean?
No. He'll bring back the list, you know, yeah. that he was doing before. I mean, he'll
do a segment with Kevin there. Owens. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll be no, great. You're exactly right. It's that audience does not want to be challenged. That is incredibly well said. You're exactly right.
Yeah. And that's just, yeah, it's just the way it is. So it's perfect. So he'll go back there. Let's see. Let's go over this second chunk of stuff here. AEW partnering with White Castle for a new combo. Will Ospreay appeared backstage, not on TV, of course, but he was backstage when AEW went overseas to Manchester and also Cardiff for a Dynamite and Collision Holiday Bash. Alex Winza defeated Mercedes Moné for the Rev Pro Women's title on AEW Collision. Tony Khan revealed the scrap plans of Madison Square Garden hosting the first ever episode of Dynamite and that whole story. Danhausen's AEW contract finally set to expire early next year. Daly's Place is going to be set to close for several years due to renovations, so no AEW homecomings in Jacksonville, at least there anyway. The company announced their first ever craft beer partnership with Bell's Two Hearted. Kota Ibushi shared an optimistic injury return update, and he said he's already doing some stuff, so he thinks that he's going to be back in the ring less than 2 years. We'll see. We'll see about that. There's a new update on Anna Jay's AEW contract status that is actually going to expire in the spring of 2026, so get those free agent dollars ready, everybody. Bandido actually won the Dynamite Diamond Ring, not MJF. Surprising. Jim Ross denied the racism allegations from Devon Dudley, saying, "I never uttered those words." Kyle O'Reilly made his first on-screen appearance since AEW Full Gear and says he's dealing with, I believe, bulging discs and broke a fractured arm and all that, so who knows when he's going to be back. When I first wrote this headline, El Clone's AEW debut set for January. Initially, I wrote his return date because I'm like, oh, yeah, he's definitely wrestled before. No, he is not in AEW. He simply appeared on TV, one of the strangest runs in their company history. He actually just made his debut this past Saturday. Ring of Honor final battle happened. We had the first ever women's pure champion crown in Deonna Purrazzo. A strange way to get there because Queen Amidala had been pulled from the semifinals due to an injury. And so Deonna Purrazzo got a green light right into the finals. Ended up winning that. Red Velvet defeated Mercedes Moné for the women's TV title. I don't think anyone saw that coming. And Sammy Guevara and the Beast Mortos winning the tag team titles. Matt Hardy took issue with Dax Harwood's comments on five-star matches. This argument over and over again. We learned that, speaking of El Clone, Hologram's AEW in-ring return still far away. Tony Khan confirmed that Grand Slam Mexico is returning. MJF unveiled a new world title belt on AEW's New Year Smash Dynamite. On that same show, Willow Nightingale winning the AEW TBS title, making history as the first ever AEW women to hold two AEW titles at the same time. Luchasaurus expected missed time with the shoulder injury. Tony Khan said Cody Rhodes has been very positive in our interactions since his AEW departure. He says to stay tuned on whether Zeta Steel has actually signed an AEW Ring of Honor contract. He gave an update and talked about Nick Wayne and saying the reason he didn't do an interim TV title was because he thought he'd be back sooner, but he's not, and hopefully should be back soon. And he also hit some interesting notes on essentially WBD offered them a deal for Ring of Honor, and he didn't want to do it. After all this time saying he wants the right partner, all this stuff, which I think a lot of us found very interesting in why he didn't want to do that. And yeah, so that was about that. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I'll run through a few of these here.
Yes, please do.
I have no commentary on this. I have nothing to add. I found the Madison Square Garden story to be really interesting, and I would like to know, just because of my interest, what the other things are throughout their history of, oh, we were going to do this, and it got blocked. Oh, we were going to do this and it fell through at the last second. Because I know, just being entertainment industry adjacent at my job, the amount of concerts that have almost happened, you know, over the 6 years that I've been with the company that I'm at, you know, I mean, the amount of giant bands that were, we were 1 week away from them signing the contract to play in a 1,000 club venue, and then this person got COVID, or actually they're going to go record an album, or oh, it all fell apart because they fired their manager and the new manager doesn't want to do it. You know, that stuff happens all the time. And so just on a personal level, I'd be very curious to know the other AEW things that have happened there. There's always so many moving parts that never see the public, and that's just of interest to me. Alex Windsor defeating Mercedes Moné for the RevPro Women's title. I just want to mention that Windsor's first stretch on TV took place when they were doing their Chicago residency at the Aragon Ballroom over the summer. And I live walking 10 minutes from the Aragon. So I went to, I think, 5 of the 6 shows they had there. And so I saw a lot of Alex Windsor, and I am so incredibly bullish on her. No. I think she's awesome. I thought she was one of the highlights of that residency. They used her a lot, and you could see the difference in popularity of her on taping 1 to taping 6, and just the way that that crowd took to her. I really like her. I hope they continue to use her in a big way. And the same can be said for Bandido, which is the other thing that I want to hit, is, you know, I guess in the grand scheme of things, I was early on Bandido because he came into Dragon Gate in January of 2018, and he wasn't a really known name at that point. You know, he was doing Lucha Indies, and it was described to me when, you know, it was announced that he was coming over. I reached out to Cubs Fan, Lucha Blog, and, you know, Rob Viper, and I go, I don't know who Bandido is. And it was told to me basically that he was Flamita's friend, and Flamita has been with Dragon Gate on and off for over a decade now, and at the time was a core member of the Dragon Gate roster, and they had a chance to bring over somebody else from Mexico, and Flamita chose Bandido. And then they had a match in Cork and Hall with the Rascals, with Zachary Wentz and Desmond Xavier. And I would say, you know, that happened in January of 2018. And on a global scale, that's probably the last Dragon Gate match that, I guess for lack of a better term, went viral, that people that don't know what Dragon Gate is paid attention to. Maybe Pac versus KZ a year later, because some of those Pac matches got a lot of buzz. But that Dragon Gate tour completely changed the complexity of Bandido's career. He blew past Flamita, because Flamita started taking a lot more bookings in the United States. You know, he started getting brought into PWG, and Bandido was just better than him on those shows. You know, that was at a real transition point in Flamita's career, where he had gone from sort of looking like a 1995 Rey Mysterio Jr., which might sound hyperbolic, but I promise you, if you watched Flamita in 2014 and 2015, it was an accurate comp. It was like, oh my, we might have found the next guy. But then at that point, he started putting on a lot of muscle. He was moving around the ring different, and Bandido blew by him. And then you saw him, you know, really soak up the last vestige of the U.S. Super Indies, where he was in AAW and he was in Ring of Honor right before the pandemic. And he was on the High Spot Super Show and a featured spot and all those things. So he's been in my life for a very long time now. And wrestling continues to have, you talked about it with Chris Jericho, you know, look, it's good that wrestlers are A, wrestling longer, and B, living longer. That's an improvement we've seen over the last 20 years. But in the same way that the biggest movie stars in the world are still Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, it's the most popular wrestlers are the guys that were the most popular 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And there's a real, it's an entertainment industry issue. There's a number of factors, and I think about this a lot. There's a number of factors, you know, why Green Day headlines every festival instead of Turnstile, because Green Day benefited from a monoculture in the same way that Turnstile never will. But we still need to get younger. We still need to push young wrestlers. And Bandido, to me, despite not having the most fluent of English, is the guy that I circle and put a gold star next to. And I go, man, there is something there with him. I thought he was one of the best wrestlers in the world in 2025. He not only was healthy for most of the year, which was great to see, brilliant in AEW, brilliant in CMLL. I think he can work with anybody. And I'm really, really curious to see how he's handled in 2026. Now, he's not a future ace. You know, I don't need him holding the AEW World Heavyweight title for 18 months and being what Omega was or what Jericho was at the beginning of the company. But do I think that he can headline a pay-per-view? I absolutely do. And I'm very glad to see him being used the way that he is right now.
Yeah, I think I talked about this in the series, one of the guests. I'd like to see him win next year's Continental Classic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone that you mentioned could work with a bunch of different people. I mean, it's a lot of time between now and then. But I think to your point, getting him in the mix with some of those upper tier guys, like, you know, I don't know what Kenny Omega has left in the tank and how many singles matches we have. Mm-hmm. That'd be a great feature match if someone would be like, this guy is next. And I think they have so many of those guys like Takeshas, Banditos, and others that are kind of like, they're ready. They're kind of bubbling. And AEW doesn't need them to get in that upper level right now because they have so many people, but eventually it's going to be their time.
It's the tough thing that wrestling is dealing with. It's like, you know, I love Roderick Strong. I love Kyle O'Reilly. I don't want to invest in them in 2026. Give me Beast Mortos. Give me Bandito. You know, give me something new. I think the wrestling world is really just looking for that next thing to latch on to. And I do think Bandito is, again, you know, outside of Takeshita, sort of the guy that I'm latching on to most right now. And as I scroll through their roster page, there's a real long-term issue here of who the next great male American wrestling star is. I think post-pandemic, we've really struggled to develop male wrestlers in America and to some degree Japan in a real meaningful way. And I'm not sure we'll feel that this year or next year, but I think 5 years from now, if serious changes don't happen, it's going to be a real problem. I was talking about this. I did a show with Alan Forel, who to me is the best wrestling analyst there is. In November, we were talking about 20 years since Eddie Guerrero's passing, and the way that it's funny, you know, in some degrees, the way that Eddie is remembered and some of the things about his career that are forgotten. And one of the things that he and I both really harped on was the legend of the Eddie Guerrero training stories of being in Mexico and being in the New Japan Dojo in that time period. And that went on to Hiro and Punk and Cabana and Danielson and the way that they trained and them going to the Butlins camps in England. Then you had a generation of early 2010 New Japan or late 2000s Dragon Gate, where you could see those guys that were killing it on the American Indies go to Japan, get into that system, and then just objectively get better. I mean, that's the Dragon Gate charm. Everybody who's ever worked in Dragon Gate gets better because they go to Dragon Gate. And then if you talk to any of them, and I do often, you know, they go, oh yeah, no, it's like, you know, it changed my life. You know, Pac and Matt Sydal and Jack Evans and Ricochet and Rich Swann, you know, they all go, I have everything I have because of Dragon Gate. But something has changed in the last 10 years where we're not developing male wrestlers the way that we used to. And Bandito's, you know, it's not like Bandito's young. You know, he's 31, I think. Kyle Fletcher's the only guy under 30 in AEW where I go, that is a future world heavyweight champion. That is a guy that I can rally the troops around. Everybody else, they're in their 30s, and that should terrify everybody.
Yeah, I think it's an issue with guaranteed TV contracts.
Mm-hmm.
This issue with bloated rosters and this arms race to just hold on to and let's just put them on this property and this property. It's there's not enough, you know, back in the day, older guys, and not to say they all should have been, but older guys are eventually kind of farmed out and you just kind of, it's the cycle, right? It's the cycle.
Well, it's leaving the territory. It's like the Jericho thing. You know, ideally there would be sorry to TNA fans. I still don't really see them as a legitimate third promotion, especially given their partnership with WWE, but we're missing a third promotion that a guy like Roderick Strong can go to, regenerate some buzz and work on top and then come back and filter in the mid card in AEW when he's a little bit hotter. And I think wrestling is really suffering from Ring of Honor being mismanaged, from TNA being what it is. And, you know, for as much as I enjoy MLW, it's just not at the level to compete in a serious financial way with these other promotions. And I think that's a real issue going forward. I also just think we're dealing with a change in demographic of who wants to become a pro wrestler. And, you know, in my own life, you know, I'm a very artistic sort of softer person. I don't really want to surround myself with UFC gym bros, but in wrestling, that's what I want. And I unfortunately think there might be too many of me. There might be too many people that are not watching Nick Bockwinkel, Shinya Hashimoto, Eddie Guerrero. They're watching anime and getting inspired from that. And I understand that that might make me sound 700 years old, and that's fine. But I think the type of wrestler that's getting into wrestling is also gravely concerning to me.
Yeah, good points. Good points. Let's go through the month in Japan. Andrade was announced for his New Japan return for Wrestle Kingdom 20. Of course, that just happened this past week. And Saya Kamitani making history in the Tokyo Sports Awards as the first ever female MVP. A cryptic stardom video teased a new arrival, and there was speculation about Dakota Kai. A masked Bad Bunny was spotting. Actually, this is a CML event. I don't know why I have this in here. I'll throw it in here anyway. The masked Bad Bunny spotted attending a CMLL event. Definitely not in Japan. Alex Winter, her stardom debut date was revealed. That actually happened just this past weekend. New Japan announced a huge ticket milestone for Wrestle Kingdom 20. Sold out. The company crowned a World Tag League Tournament winners. Zack Sabre Jr. And how do I pronounce this name?
I always go with the last name, which is just Oiwa.
All right, there you go. There you go. Try not to butcher that. The company confirmed that Tanahashi versus Okada be in the main event at Wrestle Kingdom 20. A tag team title match confirmed be headlining New Year's Dash, and the full talent list was revealed for that show. New matches are added to the Hiroshi Tanahashi New Japan retirement tour that are going into this. Tomohiro Ishii coming back off that shoulder injury, returning for Wrestle Kingdom 20. They confirmed the entire card, teams to the Rambo. Also, David Finlay and Clark Connors reported looking to explore free agency as their deals are up imminently, and dates and locations were revealed for the New Japan Cup tournament. I apologize, there's no Dragon Gate information.
I was just about to say, they had a pretty noteworthy December. Do you want me to hit the Dragon Gate headlines real quick?
Yes, go for it. Go for it.
I will have a shameless plug here, because at the beginning of December, they concluded their King of Gate tournament, which is their version of the G1. Sometimes it's block play, sometimes it's single elimination. This year it was single elimination, and the winner of that tournament ended up being a wrestler by the name of Gianni Valletta. And Valletta is from Malta. He does a Bruiser Brody inspired gimmick, and he's been hanging around Dragon Gate for 2 years now. And for a lot of lapsed Dragon Gate fans, they might see that name and they might remember him from an All Japan run that he had in the late 2010s, or they just might see that name and go, what happened to my Dragon Gate? Where are the 5-6 men with abs doing backflips? Like, this is not this is not what I want. But I wrote a very long article. Not very long. I wrote a long article, but it's digestible. You can go read it at voiceswrestling.com, detailing Valletta's time in this promotion, because I think one of the unsung stories in wrestling is that they took this guy who didn't fit the mold of the promotion. Dragon Gate fans historically only know Dragon Gate. So, like, they don't watch Noah, they don't watch New Japan, they don't watch, you know, Dragon Gate fans hate DDT because Dragon Gate fans look at DDT as all of the wrestlers that weren't good enough to get through the Dragon Gate Dojo, because most of them are Dragon Gate Dojo rejects. So, like, it's a very isolated fan base. So this guy from Malta comes in doing a Bruiser Brody tribute act, and no one in the, like, it means nothing to Dragon Gate fans, not because Bruiser Brody tribute acts are played out, but because they didn't grasp onto what he was doing. And slowly over time, they use the most old school pro wrestling tricks. You know, he comes through the crowd with a chain. They added a siren to his entrance so that when he came out to the ring, it was a warning, and you would see women and children flee from their seats. I have a friend that lives in Kobe, where Dragon Gate's based out of, and he goes to all the shows in Kobe and Osaka. And he told me a few months after Valletta had debuted and had started to find his footing in the promotion, he sends me this text. He's like, I went to the bathroom at intermission. It was right after the Valletta match, and there's children crying in the bathroom from his entrance. Like, they've hit on something here, because you and I might see it and go, oh, Brody act, know what it is. But it was new to this fan base. And over time, he's just ingrained himself into this roster that, to me, is still the highest level of wrestling that there is. You know, it's the highest floor there is. You very rarely see bad matches in Dragon Gate. And when he came in, he did not fit the style, and he was having a hard time fitting in. But they brought him back for a second tour, and then a third tour, and a fourth tour. And all of a sudden, he became one of my favorite acts in the promotion, because he was this just tower of a man in this promotion that's largely made up of small athletic wrestlers. And so He ends up winning King of Gate this year. He wrestled a guy named Ishin in the finals. Ishin debuted a few years ago alongside his brother, and their parents were both wrestlers in the 90s. So they were promoted as Japan's first supernovas, father, mother, and then two brothers becoming wrestlers. His other brother has since retired, which was a bummer because I really liked him as a young wrestler. But Ishin has become just this five-tool player. He can do lucha. He can brawl. He can do a traditional Dragon Gate match. He can do comedy. He can do everything. And he and Valletta went out there, and they had this great match in the King of Gate finals. Valletta wins, and then he goes on and has an Open the Dream Gate match with Madoka Kakuta at their second Cork and Hall show in December. And I, Kakuta's Dream Gate run has been a little touch and go with me. I haven't loved the way that he's presented himself as a champion, but they did this thing with Valletta that I wish more people would have paid attention to, because they took a risk as a company, and what they did was really, really interesting and really rewarding to watch as a fan, to see where he was at January of 2024 through December of 2025. It's not anything that you would go like, oh, Dragon Gate's the future of pro wrestling. They're so progressive. They're always one step ahead. They were booking it like it was Bill Watts Mid-South. Like, it was the most basic pro wrestling you've ever seen, and it worked. So that was really what happened for most of December in Dragon Gate. And then they closed out the year with a pair of Open the Triangle Gate Championship matches, which is their trios title in Kobe for their fan appreciation shows at the end of the year that were really high level, sort of I have this line of, you know, there's some matches that only Dragon Gate can do, and a three-way trios match at the level they were performing at is one of those things that still, even in 2025 or 2026, only Dragon Gate can do. So they closed the year with those. That is what happened in Dragon Gate in
That's great.
Five. Thank you.
Yeah. Do they still, well done, do they still do events in the United States?
So they brought back the Dragon Gate USA banner last year at WrestleMania weekend. I recommend everybody, and I don't even know, I guess it would be on Fight, powered by Triller Plus or whatever is left of that platform. I think that's where it ended up airing, because I don't ever travel. I'm very work focused, but I took 2 days off of work and flew out to Vegas to watch and hang out with all the Dragon Gate guys. And Friday night, because I got out of there before WrestleMania, so it was Friday night, they had a joint show with Pro Wrestling Revolution, which is a West Coast indie that does a lot of work with luchadors, and they had a joint show there that was the most fun wrestling experience I've ever had. It was going head-to-head with Spring Break, which obviously was Sabu versus Janela. That was the big ticket. They had far more people there. It was a pretty sparse crowd for the Dragon Gate show. But the Dragon Gate show ended up being so much better than anything on Spring Break. And that main event was a six-man tag of Shun Skywalker, Coach Minoru, and Ishin, who at the time were in the heel unit in Dragon Gate. Shun Skywalker has since turned face, against KZ, Hyo, and Benkei, who are three current generation newer wrestler baby faces, and they had a six-man tag that, if you enjoyed Blood Generation versus Do Fixer, which we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of this year, if you enjoyed any of the Ring of Honor stuff or any of the Dragon Gate USA stuff, this match is on that level. And I'm directly facing the hard cam in the front row, so you can see me, especially by the end of the match, full on losing my mind. I mean, I'm normally a pretty tepid person. Despite doing what I do for a living, if the camera's not on me and the red light's not on me, I don't want to be the main character. I don't really want to be seen or heard from, but I was having the time of my life at that show. So they'll be back. I think I can say this. They'll be back in Vegas for WrestleMania weekend this year. I don't know. I know some names that are coming over. I don't know all names that are coming over, but they're going to try to do it again. I know some of the promotions they're working with this year for WrestleMania weekend, they are really excited, the U.S. promoters are, about getting to work with Dragon Gate. So that's always good, because a lot of the time when a U.S. indie will book Dragon Gate wrestlers, the promoter will either reach out to me or I'll reach out to them and say, hey, do you know who this is? Do you need help? Do your announcers need notes? You know, what can I do, or, you know, what do you need from me to assist you? Which some promoters take me up on, some don't. That's fine. That's your prerogative. But they'll be back in Vegas this year. You know, I don't think the economics of ever doing a full-time Dragon Gate USA would ever work out again. But they'll be there for WrestleMania weekend, and they always work really hard. So
that's cool. Great. Was there anything else in the month of Japan other than that stood out to you?
Oh,
there's a lot of Wrestle Kingdom build, you know?
A lot of Wrestle Kingdom build. I find the Andrade thing to be fascinating. I guess I'm way more interested in him as a New Japan wrestler than I am an AEW wrestler. I can't explain that or quantify that. I just think him in New Japan is something that I want to see, and him in AEW is not really something that I want to see. I also thought he was great in his brief CMLL stint a year and a half ago. I think that was two summers ago now. So I wouldn't mind seeing him work more there. I really just don't have an interest in him in AEW. But, you know, even at my most ardent New Japan supporting and interest level, the tag league was never something that I paid attention to. I do love Zack Sabre Jr. and Oiwa as a team. More power to them. But they did what they needed to do to get ready for Wrestle Kingdom. As we sit here recording this the day of New Year's Dash, I'm entertained and perplexed by people that seem to think that New Japan has righted the ship. There's not a promotion I trust less in the world at this point. It used to be the promotion we all trusted the most. I would be more than happy to go, they'll figure it out. They'll win me over by the end of the story. I have not felt that way in years, and I can't believe after two good shows, we're going like, the Lion Mark, King of Sports, they're back. I go, no, they're not. They're going to screw it up in February. Yeah. Everybody reel it in. It's okay to be excited, but they're not back. Their heavyweight roster is complicated at best, and their junior roster is atrocious, but you know, people are excited, more power to them.
well said. Well, again, this conversation is exactly why I wanted to actually talk to you in person. This has been great. Before I let you go, let's give you a chance to plug where people can hear you, watch you, read you, feel you. The floor is yours.
Yeah, for any of the wrestling interviews, and that would be in studio interviews with Tony Khan and Ricochet. And I really like the Ricochet one, 'cause we talked a lot about Dragon Gate, which when I told him, when he sat down and I go, hey, I don't know if they told you, but I'm like a really big Dragon Gate fan, and I kind of want to spend half the interview talking about that. He couldn't believe that somebody said that to him, and he was more than happy to. So, you know, Tony Khan, Ricochet, Kyle Fletcher. I did a great interview earlier this year with Rocky Romero, where we talked a lot about his time in CMLL and how it's evolved. And if you're somebody looking to get into Lucha, I would really recommend giving that a watch. And those are all on the Q101 Chicago YouTube channel. And then, hey, you know, I also interview a bunch of bands there. You can watch those interviews as well. I wish people liked the band interviews as much as they like the wrestling interviews. Unfortunately, they're way more into the wrestling interviews, but I have, 100 interviews with up and coming artists there as well. And then, as we've talked about throughout the show, on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network and on its own individual feed, it's the Open the Voice Gate podcast that I do with Mike Spears. And that is a weekly Dragon Gate show in which I think we cover Dragon Gate as well as anybody covers any individual promotion. I'm very proud of the work that we do on that show. And on that same feed is a show called Those Days, a Michinoku Pro retrospective. And we've done, I think, 11 episodes now. We started it last year, and we are going from the very beginning of Michinoku Pro through, my goal is to go through in the timeline, March of 1993, when it began, through April of 2000. And that might sound daunting, but we actually have a plan and a timeline of how to get there. I'm really proud of that show. I like how many people in the industry listen. I get hit up by wrestlers a lot that really enjoy it, which is very flattering, but we cover Michinoku Pro from an angle that I don't think anybody has really talked about. I don't think a lot of people realize that Michinoku Pro was the very first promotion in Japan that was based outside of Tokyo, and just how unfathomable the idea of independent wrestling based outside of Tokyo was when Michinoku Pro started. Bahu, who is the great FMW historian, translated a bunch of Japanese wrestling books about a year ago, and one of them was a book written by the great Sasuke in about 1995, and it just happened to line up with when we were launching this podcast. And so we have detailed notes from Sasuke on the first 2 years of Michinoku Pro, and it gave us all this insight that, you know, maybe we had some details of but not all of. And then we've gone and talked to, you know, our friends in Japan who have helped translate stuff for us about, you know, the first time Michinoku Pro ran Cork and Hall, the story was always that the promoter ran off with the money. And despite the fact that they sold out Cork and Hall in advance, they didn't make any money from the show. And then through YouTube videos and our friends, we were able to figure out that, no, the promoter died before he could pay the Michinoku Pro guys. There's been a lot of stuff like that. So it's not just match reviews from 30 years ago. There's a lot of that, which, you know, it's Michinoku Pro, so they're oftentimes very good matches. But there's a story being told here about the history of Japanese wrestling, about the history of independent Japanese wrestling in the 90s that we're really proud of. And if you enjoy that series during the pandemic, so this is now 5 years ago, but on the same podcast feed, we reviewed every Dragon Gate USA show. And God bless the pandemic because we had the time to do that. I certainly don't have the time to do that now. But along the way, we broke down the happenings in Japan and how Japanese wrestling was evolving. We broke down the 2010s US indie scene, which I really don't think there's another podcast that has talked about. The Davey Richards Ring of Honor Dragon Gate USA drama, the Jim Cornette Gabe Sapolsky stuff from the early 2010s, the pay-per-view industry changing independent wrestling. I don't think anybody's really gone back and looked at that in the way that we have. So despite those episodes now being 5 years old, and there's some very dated pandemic takes of like, it'll be over soon, we'll all be good. If you can get through the opening banter in those episodes, I really liked those shows we did, and those are all on the Open the Voice Gate feed or on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Yeah, it's great when passion projects also are important for wrestling history too, you know?
How we looked at it. I really feel like, and this even comes up with some Observer Hall of Fame stuff, where I'm not sure that people are looking at 2010s independent wrestling in the same lens that I'm looking at it. Now, it was also my introduction to indie wrestling. I'm very fond of even some darker periods of Ring of Honor because I was watching it in real time, but there's some stuff there that nobody's really gone back and looked at. And even, you know, in 2020, to have the hindsight of a show from 2010, 2011, 2012, when you're talking about Moxley getting signed or Seth Rollins getting signed, all these things, like I think we did some cool stuff with that. So that's on the Open the Voice Gate feed as well.
Awesome. Well, this is a great conversation. I appreciate you taking the time. Glad we were able to make it happen. Case Low, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, main event time, right? Just kidding, just kidding. It was great to have those guys on for the very first time on this show. And Case, I admired for his, like I said, the Tony Khan interviews and other stuff that he does. And then with Mike, I've been on his show a bunch, and he's a hustler. You know, he does a bunch of stuff. Also, we didn't even talk, like, he does, works at indie promotions and might have his own, but he does a lot of that stuff up in Calgary as well. So big thanks to them for making some time. The reason that this show was a little bit different than the previous 11 installments was the holidays. And the holidays, I schedule some stuff in advance, and I found it more difficult than normal, I think because the midweek Christmas, New Year's, to actually kind of lock someone in. And it was a little bit more difficult. So Paul Fontaine, I'd moved him up to November, as I mentioned the other day. And then I was able to thankfully just say, hey, you guys might have like half an hour of your time. So I was able to break it up and all that, was able to make it work. So hopefully you enjoyed that. However, we're not done because I have to go through the month of December for NXTNA and also the Junk Drawer. I'm not going to leave you without talking about the rest of this. So NXTNA, I believe I actually did a solo edition of this series like 3 years ago, maybe. And it was one of those things where I couldn't get anyone on. So I had to go back in time, back to the classics. So we'll do this. I can figure this out, right? So of course we had TNA Wrestling announcing their new TV deal with AMC that begins a week from this Thursday, depending on when you're listening to this. Of course, Carlos Silva confirming the status that the NXT partnership is intact, not going anywhere anytime soon. There was some question about how it's going to affect impact availability and the archives on TNA Plus. They told me in a statement, also some others as well, that you'd be able to get Impact Plus if you're still a TNA subscriber. They did not respond back when I asked about, is the show going to be still available live or not? So we'll have to see about that. Carlos Silva, TNA president, also had to address whether WWE played a role in the TV deal negotiations. So that was a big topic. How much did WWE have an influence and so on and so forth? And Silva kind of played that down as well. How much do I believe of all that? I don't know. There was no money announced, which is always a big, not red flag, but a check mark in the box of it's not significant enough where they want you to know. And Mike Gilbert, who's on early this series, and know some people that know some things, mentioned he thinks it's a revenue share, which I would not be surprised about at all. And, I mean, look, they're on a bigger platform than they were before with access. I think if you're going to take any deal, you got to go for it. Do I think they got the $10 million a year that they wanted? I don't think so. I think it's a deal. It's kind of a let's see how this works out. Probably a multi-year deal, you know, maybe 2 years with an option for a third. Because obviously the TV landscape changes so much, right? You really can't commit long-term to anyone for any significant amount of money. Because, I mean, look what's happened in like the past 6 months with WBD and Netflix and Paramount, right? Everything changes on a drop of a hat, as they say. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting and see how this works out. Again, as I've said in Wrestling Observer Live and on this podcast before, and so on, the big question for me is, do they want to become a true independent number three again? I don't think they do. So that's kind of a bummer, right? Case mentioned that when he was talking about, you know, really we need another big three, a third big domestic company, and one that's independent. And I don't know. I would like to think that at some point maybe they have an eye toward that. But, you know, as we go through the series, again, I had to combine all these things. NXT, TNA, for a reason, I think they enjoy it. They don't have to have as big of a roster and have financial commitments that heavy. They can use an NXT talent. May not be all the right people that they want. Occasionally, a WWE guy will come down. AJ Styles making that appearance at Slammiversary. They won't let him wrestle. They will let him make a one-off appearance. And, yeah, that's something I would look for in the year ahead is that relationship, is it still the same as this, kind of the middle class of NXT interacting with the upper class of TNA, and just see how that relationship goes and so on. I don't think that WWE has any interest in buying NXT, or sorry, TNA. And the reason I say that is because TKO head Mark Shapiro had said they're not really in acquisition mode, right? And they're talking about the boxing with Zuffa Boxing and Saudis and all that. And it's really not a big financial risk for them to do that because they're not buying anything. They're simply being hired to promote and actually get some money out of the thing and that association with Turki Alsheikh and all that. I don't think they're going to buy TNA. I mean, what are you buying? And I've said that before. You know, Archives, it feels like Archives have never been colder, right? I mean, I appreciate what WWE is doing with the Vault and all that, but you know, we talk about these Archives and, of course, the YouTube – or sorry, the WB archive library for the PLEs mainly moving to Netflix in a non-exclusive deal. Ton of stuff on YouTube. How much time do people have to spend to actually go back and watch if they are still watching the current product? There's a whole content industry built on retro stuff, right? Our website, Brian and Vinny have done that seemingly forever with different shows. And it's fun to look back. It's fun to look back at history. It matters. But as Case was mentioning, and I've said as well in the show and others, that you know, there's just too much. It's too much to keep up with. And it's hard to – and this is the case in MMA and the UFC as well. It's hard to look back at old shows if you have no time to digest all the new ones. So it's a – archives, I don't think they're interested in just buying them for the archives. They could be. I mean, they do have some – you know, plenty of stuff in there. But I'm sure if they needed footage or something, they could just call up and say, we need this. And TNA would give it to them. If you're going to buy talent, I mean, look, they've already taken Jordan Grace. They've taken Joe Hendry. They're going to take Leon Slater. They're going to take whoever they want when they want. And so it's kind of the best of both worlds for them. They don't have to financially really invest that much in this. And they're able to get their younger guys and ladies some work, which is good for them. But is TNA really getting anything? Well, they get to survive for a few more years. But in terms of like a purchase or sale or anything like that, I just don't see why they would do that at this point. So we'll see how that all plays out. The company held Final Resolution, their last streaming event of the year. Bear Bronson, C.W. Anderson, and Brock Anderson, and The Righteous made their debuts on the pre-show. The Righteous, I actually think, did a run-in with the Hardys on that show. Stax, speaking of NXT, winning the international title from Steve Maclin. That'd be a big feud or a lead to something a little bit bigger I'll talk about in a minute. Leon Slater, as I mentioned, was pulled from weekend indie events, and we didn't know why, and then came to be a couple days later. We learned because he was going to be on Saturday Night's main event. And there was some blowback or some, you know, grumbling fans on social because of him being pulled, and he's just like, you know, what are you going to do if you're Leon Slater, the biggest company in the world, wants you to be on that part of John Cena's final match night on Saturday Night's main event? You got to take that. 100% of the time. It's just part of the way things go. Masha Slamovich's contract expired. She was officially gone from TNA. The Genesis pay-per-view, which will take place in just a couple weeks as I'm speaking these words, beginning to take shape. As I mentioned with Stacks, Ariana Grace, her fiancé, turned on his future father-in-law, Santino Marella. How about that? If you're married, you want to turn on your in-laws like that? With a low blow following this NXT versus TNA War Games-esque cage match they had on a episode of TV. Of course, AAA, the date was revealed for Lucha Libre's, AAA's debut in Fox Mexico coming up in January. So this month, a big month for that. Details for the company's Rey de Reyes event, AAA's Rey de Reyes event, was revealed March in Puebla, Mexico. They held Guerra de Titones. Now, again, as I mentioned in previous episodes, my master of Spanish and Japanese is not great, as you heard us talking with Case, asking him if he could pronounce Iwa's last name. And I still think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but I apologize for that. So, I defer and I apologize to anyone listening to this that maybe wondering how I'm butchering these names, but I it's hard for me to watch everything regularly to really kind of get some of these pronunciations down. So maybe it's Guerra de Titones, add the accent in there. Aired on WWE's YouTube channel, of course, which is a great move for them. Another reason Ring of Honor should be on YouTube. Rey Mysterio replacing the injured Penta. That was supposed to be the Lucha Brothers reunion, but that had to be put off to a different time due to Penta's shoulder injury. Canelo Alvarez, the big-time boxer, made a surprise appearance on the show. And El Hijo del Vikingo aligned with Omos. Yes, Omos. And Dorian Rodan as Omos, his AAA run continues. You write a book on this guy's career. This is the strangest career. He went from Japan to Mexico. I think this whole year he's wrestled, I don't know, five times, maybe. And I think not once in WWE. Actually, I'm pretty positive of that. It's like everywhere else but the United States. Very hard to believe. And then Dominic Mysterio, this is kind of one of the bigger news stories of the month in NXT and AEW, and of course WWE. He suffered a shoulder injury at the event in the that tag team match involved Rey Mysterio, Rey Fénix, and so on. Out indefinitely with a shoulder injury. Could be out about a month, so he could be back by the Rumble. We'll see. But one of the, I think, the breakout stars of 2025 going to be out for a bit, and we'll see. You know, is he a world champion? I think at some point, but that could be this year, could be next year. But I think some big things for Dominic are ahead. There's something there, and people really seem to be into him, both as a heel and more as a babyface now. But there's something there. And I, again, as I talked about this series, I had not predicted that years ago. And I don't know if anyone else did as well. NXT Deadline. Obafemi regained the NXT championship from Ricky Saints. Kendall Gray seems to be everyone's pick to be a breakout star on the main roster. Won the Women's Iron Survivor Challenge. Javon Evans, who just signed with WWE, officially on the Raw side in the storyline last night as I'm recording this this portion of the podcast, won the Men's Iron Survivor Challenge. And Tony D'Angelo returned after a lengthy absence. Ricky Saints turned against Javon Evans, and that helped cost him the shot he got at Obafemi by winning the Iron Survivor Challenge. So that feud kicking off in full also throughout that month. Thea Hale defeated Blake Monroe for the Women's North American title due to a botch. And some creative plans were changed as a result. Everyone was supposed to, you know, be ready to go home for the 2 week break, I believe it was, for the holidays. And then they had to change all these plans. And there was a report that Monroe was quote unquote injured and unhappy after this incident. I don't even know if you want that news out there. You know, shit happens, as they say, and it happened here. And we'll see how that gets rectified on NXT Tuesday. There's a report from Fightful Select that came out that WWE is considering bringing Monroe up to the main roster already and talking about bringing her up on the Raw side. So that's very interesting. So we'll see what happens tonight. Wouldn't be surprised if Thea Hale retains the title. Then obviously, I think you know that Blake Monroe is getting called up, and she's only been in the organization for, you know, half a year. But, I mean, look, she had a big run in AEW and certainly I think can hold her own. But as always, it's the presentation and the just what are the plans? And they have a lot of people they called up. Also kind of packs in the roster a little bit, potentially future cuts. I you know, there's only so many people you can have on the roster at the same time. Nick Khan said they don't bench people, so you got to figure something out. So very interesting things there. NXT is set to be returning to Atlanta in February. They also announced more house show dates. They're getting out more and more now And there was another report that came out that the company's considering more road dates for NXT. I believe Brian Alvarez said they're going to his neck of the woods somewhere in Washington coming up soon. So they're certainly getting out there. And look, they have a good talented roster to do it. You know, you run, you know, smaller buildings, kind of like what AEW is doing with Dynamite and Collision and so on. You run smaller buildings and kind of get out there and get these people working. That could be pretty good for them. Ricky Saints set to appear in the CW's Wild Card Season 3. They unveiled the lineup for New Year's Evil, which, of course, is happening Tuesday night, as I'm recording this as of a Tuesday morning. Ricky Saints again, the month of Ricky Saints, set for a Reality of Wrestling event, of course, for Booker T's group. Sol Ruka challenged Chelsea Green for the United States title on NXT TV, and several NXT wrestlers were expected to be called up soon. That came from our Brian Alvarez, and turned out to be true. I mean, look, Trick Williams, Obafemi, Jordan Grace, Joe Hendry, Javon Evans, and Lash Legend recently. So certainly you're starting to get a youth infusion, which is definitely needed. Now you actually get these younger people in the mix. And I'm going to do a column later on this month about how old guys rule and some other reasons I think that they do that. Actually, some of which I hinted about when I was talking to Case. Andrade revealed the original AAA Worlds Collide plans for him before his release. He was set to be in a four-way with El Hijo del Vikingo, Rey Fénix, and Obafemi. But instead, he was moved to Money in the Bank, and that began the beginning of the end. Shiloh Hill, the enigmatic one, see if I can pronounce that better. He made his NXT TV debut. Reading is easy. A lot of people were buzzing about him because he's very strange, and that's good. It's good to be different. We had another name change. Anthony Luke, or it might be Anthony Luque, changed his name to Cam Hendricks, and he also, of course, I mentioned earlier in the series, got married to Maxine Dupri. TNA finalized short-term deals with several wrestlers. There was a report that came out that a lot of their contracts were expiring in January, so we'll see what happens with some of the free agents there and so on and so forth. They do a lot of short-term deals, not a ton of long-term deals there, which I kind of like in some aspects, but, of course, now it's so much different now with the NXT talent and so on. Tessa Blanchard, speaking of TNA, said she's tired of being used as clickbait over racism allegations, and she shared some private messages she had with La Rosa Negra, who's kind of at the center of some of these things, and she also commented on her past allegations and so on. So she's tired of it. She's sick of it. And I don't think fans are going to relent on her one bit. I don't feel that that babyface turn coming anytime soon. I'm sure she wants a shot in NXT and perhaps a shot to get in the main roster with WWE. And I think she has to – it's going to be a hard road to climb, put it that way, based on all this. The Hardys re-signed with TNA, smart move for them. And then Steve Maclin revealed there were plans for a CM Punk TNA feud if Punk had signed with the company. And this is something that Scott D'Amore had told him. Of course, they were talking about trying to sign CM Punk at one point and did not happen. This would be after he was let go from AEW, I believe. And time frame would make sense there. So that was Scott D'Amore told Steve Maclin that was the plan. So this one, chalk one of those up of what could have happened. What if? And that is the month of December. NXTNA. And a lot more of that coming up in the year ahead. Let's go to the junk drawer and finish things up, shall we? Mercedes Moné defended her multiple titles at a Rev Pro event in Cardiff, Wales. Ricochet defended the AEW national title also on a Rev Pro event. MJF returning to Limitless Wrestling in the Indies after a six-year absence. Limitless Wrestling, a promotion I used to be affiliated with in Maine. And they bring up a ton of people for this Limitless Rumble coming up in just a couple weeks. Eddie Kingston, Ortiz, they're doing, of course, MJF. Hook is coming in, and they're doing a WBID women's title match at some point as well. So good for them. It's going to be a big show for them, and MJF going to be a big part of that. Harley Cameron set to make her pro wrestling Eve debut. Three AEW versus CMLL matches are announced for this new December event, which is essentially a regular CMLL show, but they're building it up with, you know, Claudio Castagnoli and so on, and just some crossover matches there. Andrade won the WWC Universal Championship in his return to Puerto Rico, so Andrade back in action, as we've talked about a lot during this episode. Dakota Kai finally set for her return to the Indies. Been kind of quiet since her release, and has been able to sign with anyone, hasn't really done a lot, but kind of starting to get back out there. I expect we'll see a little bit more from her in the year ahead. I don't know if AEW is in the cards or not. Doesn't really feel like it. You feel it would have made the move already, but you never know. Tiger Mask set to face Dynamite Kid in the GCW Jersey J-Cup, a headline I didn't think I'd read in 2025. Stephen Borden Jr., a.k.a. Sting's son, was announced for a new indie match, again, as we talked about earlier. He made his debut on an AEW Dark show, so certainly that contract seems to be coming. GCW promoter Brett Lauderdale gave a Nick Gage update, one of his closest friends, a shocking and remarkable turnaround. Good for Nick Gage. CMLL set new attendance milestones at Arena Mexico, three straight sellouts in 1 week. Obviously, if you've listened to Wrestling Observer Radio or a lot of the shows on our network, if you've ever listened to Dave Meltzer, he loves CMLL, and he clearly thinks they're the promotion of the year for 2025. We'll have to see what the fans say in the Wrestling Observer Awards. But they had certainly doing some great things down there in Arena Mexico. Saraya made a rare indie appearance and said she forgot how fun the indies are. Also, someone I was surprised did not return to WWE. We talked about that earlier in this series, but we'll see what happens with her in the year ahead. Jonathan Gresham set for his in-ring return after suffering multiple strokes in August. Set to take on his friend Will Ferrara. Sonya Deville booked a new movie role. There was this independent event in Canada, I believe it was for C4, and fans attempted to rush the ring. And two guys, I guess, jumped in the ring and beat up a referee, like, right before the main event. And some people thought it was part of an angle. It was just this whole thing. If you read the story, it's pretty crazy. But, yeah, it was C4 up in Canada, I do believe. I believe Post Wrestling got some comments from them. Hulk Hogan's widow denied Ric Flair's street drugs death claim. Masha Slamovich, we talked about her earlier, announced for her first match since her exit for TNA Wrestling. Saraya shared details of an appropriate fan encounter. Inappropriate. I think I said that. Fan encounter at a recent signing, saying her words that he slapped her ass like three times. And you're starting to see this more and more. Something I've talked about where wrestlers are now not afraid and not shy about sharing bad fan interactions. And you just kind of wonder how if there's going to be further restrictions or, you know, just a lot of these things where you feel like something really, really, I mean, inappropriately touching a woman's backside or any part of her body in these settings is not cool, not great. But you just kind of start to wonder, like, when is it going to get something really bad is going to happen? And we've had these near experiences with Mandy Rose and speaking of Sonya Deville and so on. It's the airport stuff that Rhea Ripley's brought up. Asuka very vocal about things. You hope that these organizations get ahead of it with security rather than behind it, but just the kind of way they do things, it's so much different than traditional sports, right? Where you have the team all traveling at once. It's not how this works when you're sending them, you know, Buffalo, New York and Jacksonville, Florida and all these places. Everyone's coming in from different spots. So it's hard to have security for what, 40 people you may be bringing in for a show. I don't know how you do it. Just hope that they figure something out before something really, really, really bad happens. I've been saying that a lot and continue to say that in the years ahead. Mr. Electricity Steve Regal passed away this July. One of those stories that it only happens in wrestling where some of these older guys just die and do it quietly. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, so-and-so passed away. And it gets told from this person, this person, this person. And then people get to remember months and months and months later. Former wrestler Solomon Grundy also passed away. Andrade made a surprise appearance at a House of Glory event, and he was booked for a future match. Also at that same show, a Bloodline family feud angle played out between Lance Hanoi and Zilla Fatu. Sting reflected on his final autograph signing wearing face paint, and that was the thing he had talked about. This tour throughout 2025 officially came to an end. Rick Moss and Emma, if you remember them from WWE fame, former WWE couple, expecting their second child. Ric Flair and Mike Tyson sued a cannabis company for an alleged embezzlement scheme. What a shock there. Rob Van Dam and Katie Forbes announced the birth of twin girls. Again, a headline I did not think I would read at the end of 2025. Pro Wrestling Tees released their 2025 top sellers list. Spoiler alert, it was nearly all AEW people. And so on, since they're the official merchandiser of AEW stuff. And there was a few indie talents and also like Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Ric Flair, Bret Hart, and others have some merchandise there as well. Scarlett trademarked her ring name. Big update on the megaphone stolen from Jimmy Hart at November's WrestleCade convention. It was recovered. DDP announced he was working on a Lex Luger documentary, had no idea when it was going to come out. And finally, Jerry Lawler said he had one more match left. That's what he thinks. is after he suffered another stroke this year. And just let's be smart, everybody. Let's be smart. And just like that, we're done. The year interview series has come to an end. 12 episodes. We started back in November. Again, it's Tuesday, January 6th. Happy Insurrection Day. I joke that we're ending the series. And I thank you for listening. If you listen to all these, I thank you much. You listen to any part of them, I thank you much. These take a lot of time to do. And I'm not trying to break my arm patting myself on the back. These take a lot of time to put together. I go through every single headline on the Observer website. We have an export that I get. I have to filter out all the podcasts. I filter out all the daily updates and the newsletters and, you know, just some of the subscriber exclusive stuff that doesn't really fit in this series. And I boil it down and I do a sort and I do another sort and I just go through and I copy and paste and review and take some out and have to then look at what does this headline mean, you know, those type of things. So sometimes we don't, these days don't really tell every single detail in the headline, which is not that helpful when you're trying to do a year in review series, but I digress. And it takes a healthy amount of time to do this, but it's a labor of love and I enjoy doing it. And again, I enjoy anyone and thank anyone that has been doing this or listening to this series for years, or if this is your first year, I greatly appreciate it. And with that, I bid you adieu. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcast hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be back later this week with Brandon Thurston reviewing the final quarter of AEW business for 2025. So thanks again. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.